That red head of hers is no lie.
Yours, mine, theirs.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Yours, Mine, and Theirs. I'm Roy, and I'm here to make sure that the proprieties are observed and that John and Josh use the chastity carriage appropriately.
No patty fingers.
Hey, I'm John, and I'm the motherfucker who edited this podcast, sir.
Hello, I'm Joe Pesci. Welcome to the art of seduction.
Oh, goodness. All right, well, hey, if you've listened to this podcast before, you know what you're in for. If you haven't, this is where we pick some weird movies and watch them. So the way we do this is you guys help us pick a category, and then you guys get to pick a movie, and then each of us gets to pick a movie. So today we are doing redhead female leads, and so we're going to talk about The Quiet Man, Betsy's Wedding, and Zero Dark Thirty, because we have it on good information that the girls in those movies all are natural redheads. So that's what we're doing. Anyway, joined again by Josh, which is a pleasure, but also he's our expert redhead, so we're going to be relying heavily on his knowledge.
Yeah, I hope to be able to provide some insights today.
I hope you weren't too offended by representations of your culture by these movies.
That's just become life, John. Like, that stuff just rolls off my back now.
All right.
So are you saying that, but actually you just push it deep down and it's starting to fester?
It's been festering for a long time, and it may come to a boil here during this podcast.
Okay.
It's triggering a lot of stuff.
All right. So anyway, that's what we do. You guys want to talk about anything before we get started? We actually, this is usually where we talk about nothing for a while, but we just did that for the last 25 minutes.
Sure. I'm pulled a muscle. I'm complaining. I got my first, I'm half vaxxed right now, so I'm half man right now. So that's all I'll say. Yeah, that's it. I'm just saying I'm kind of generally in pain. I don't know if it has anything to do with vaccination I got 10 days ago, or if I just attempted to do a pull-up yesterday and I hurt from it.
So my whole family got their second shot a week ago, and like almost everyone felt awful, and which is weird because when I got my second shot, I didn't really feel much, but most of my family felt bad.
I hear
which
if one you did just you guys drink do? Gatorade, then you're fine.
Could be Pfizer. We did Pfizer.
I'm Pfizer. How's Pfizer? Yeah.
Oh, I got my second Pfizer, zero symptoms.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. Like, I even had cleared my schedule just anticipating that I would be sick, but nice. Zero symptoms.
I'm glad. I didn't know they were administering Pfizer to gingers. I'm glad to hear that, Josh.
I think I'm part of a research group.
So, the Oscars just happened, and we had an Oscar contest, and between me, Josh, and John, I lost. I blame Nomadland, which I guess I shouldn't. I kind of knew it was going to win the awards that it did, and I just voted against it because I didn't want it to win.
Did you guys watch it?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I did, too. Yeah.
It was funny. I feel bad because I'm like, you know what? This is going to be crazy, but a lot of people are saying this is really like Anthony Hopkins' best work, even though no one's seen this movie. So I picked Anthony Hopkins, and so I got the points for that, and I feel really good about that. But I think it also derailed the entire night, you know? Like, because did you guys think that? It's like, okay, wait, they did Best Picture, and then they did the Best Actor categories at the end. Obviously, yeah. To do some kind of tribute to Chadwick Boseman, you know, this great actor who tragically died this year, and they didn't get the chance to do that. They're like, oh my gosh, Anthony Hopkins won, and he didn't even show up. I guess it's over.
I think that is 100% what happened, what yeah. you just said.
Yeah.
They fully expected him to win.
Yeah.
It seems crazy that nobody knew.
Yeah, nobody, like, and I guess, I don't know, that's a good statement, you know, because they haven't done it in Oscars lately, but they always, you know, I remember 20 years ago they made a big deal about, like, saying, okay, here are the accountants from Price Waterhouse, and they're here to make sure that no one knows, you know, and I don't know why accountants are, you know, are so good at keeping secrets or whatever, but I guess they but they keep secrets and they make sure that the votes are tallied correctly and everything, and so like that was a big thing like several years ago. No one knows what's in the envelopes, and so it's always going to be a surprise, and so I guess yeah, the producers of the show, which was, it was Steven Soderbergh this year, like, did the show. Like, I guess he didn't know at all. And so...
Yeah, but somebody knows, right? I mean, somebody knows.
Somebody has to print those up, right? I mean...
I just imagine they're just, like, standing there while they're putting the stage together and the program, just looking around, keeping quiet as they're getting ready for the big Chadwick Boseman, like, send-off.
Are there, like... Were people voting, like, right up until the ceremony... Like, until it was announced?
I don't know.
Were there, like, hanging chads involved, you know? Were they, like, having, like, the pollsters on the phones doing the recounts and everything?
Yeah. Like, the overseas ballots came in late.
Yeah. So anyway, that's funny. And then I think on YouTube the next day I saw like one of the videos that was offered to me is like, okay, Anthony Hopkins does his belated, and it was like 45 seconds long, and it was just Anthony Hopkins just like the next day, and he was like really tired. He's like, it turns out I won. I wasn't expecting to win. This is good news, I think. I don't know. I didn't want to win. I didn't expect to win. My love goes out to Chadwick Boseman's family. He's a really great man and a great actor. And yeah, I'm confused. And that was the whole video.
Don't you feel bad for him a little bit? Like, through no fault of his own, everyone hates him.
Yeah, a little bit. It's like, you know, he's worked his whole life. And it's, I mean, it's a really, really sad story. And you can kind of say, like, it's something he didn't say. It's like he's lived a lot, you know, he's like, what, 111 years old or something? And he's lived his whole life, and he's this world-renowned actor, and everyone is expecting this really young person who really, you know, lit up the screen, you know, to win. And now, yeah, he's like, no, I didn't want this. I don't want to be remembered right before I died as taking away the award from someone else who tragically died. Yeah.
So, that is too bad.
But I got the points and I'm happy. rest in peace, Chadwick Boseman. I'm very sorry. But I got the points. I think that put me over the edge for winning between the three of you. So also, no prize is awarded for this contest.
No DVD.
Did both of you see Minari?
No, I didn't see Minari.
It's still $20 to rent, so yeah. I'm like, you know what? I know it's really good, so I'll wait until like the rent comes down or it goes to Hulu or something.
So I'm glad I saw it because I gave the Best Supporting Actress award to the old lady from Minari,
and she won. Yeah,
yeah, she was great. Yeah, and she won. So also she won. I think she won the BAFTA award or the Golden Globe. She won one of those. So I kind of thought, oh, she actually has a really good chance here, but. Mm. Anyway, yeah. All right. Well, enough of that. You guys ready to talk about gingers or what?
I don't know if I've ever been ready, but I'm glad we brought an expert.
That's all I do every day is talk about ginger.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, so we can just do this real quick. So the average tomato meter for these three movies is 77%. The Quiet Man, Betsy's Wedding, and Zero Dark Thirty. So respectively, we've got Maureen O'Hara. We have Molly Ringwald and Jessica Chastain. The Quiet Man, 91% from the tomato meter. So fairly highly regarded. No idea how much it cost. It only made $10 million.
Hmm. Yeah, but that was $4.6 billion in $1952. You never know how that works.
All right. Well, John, you want to sum up The Quiet Man?
Okay, The Quiet Man. Okay, so this is a thing that happened... John Wayne, his name is Sean Wayne in this movie, I think, just slightly different. He goes back home to his ancestral home in Ireland, and, you know, he's a cowboy. He hangs up his cowboy hat, and he puts on this little engineer cap, you know, like he's a, you know, some kind of 20s journalist or something. And he goes home, gets off the train, and he immediately sees this fiery redhead, you know, werewolf lady. kind of like in Greek myth. Just like in Greek myth, he's like, I must have her, you know. So they start courting, which involves a lot of him chasing her down and grabbing her and, you know, and then, like, get wet in the rain and stuff like that. And eventually she concedes somewhat. So he's like, hey, I'm going to marry this here lady, you know? And so the town, like, in order to do that, she has to get permission from her brother. And in order to do that, like, everybody loves Sean Wayne in this town. And so they get together and, like, okay, how are we going to trick her brother into letting him, you know, into him letting her get married, right? And so they do this thing where they have a horse race, and if the person grabs the right bonnet, then okay, I can't remember the deal. Anyway, they trick the Red, her brother. His name is Red, fitting, right? His name is Red. Into him thinking that he was actually going to, well, he was going to give away his sister to be married, because it kind of seems like he wants to marry his own sisters a little bit, you know.
It does.
It totally does. Like, it's like, okay, fine. You don't have to marry your own sister. In the meantime, the town mummy, she might be available, and she is, like, ready to go. And so he's like, okay, fine, I'll marry the town mummy. It turns out the town mummy doesn't want to marry him. And so he's cheated, and so he already agreed to it, and so he's like, okay, you guys can get married, but I'm not going to give the 350 pounds that, you know, is part of her dowry. And so they do get married, and he's like, okay, great. You know, well, this is Sean Wayne. It's like, okay, great. You know, I got the girl I like, and so, you know, come on, let's do it. And she's like, no, I'm not going to have sex with you until I get the 350 pounds that my brother owes, because it's a respect thing, and also, honestly, you know, you are just this big American block of wood, and you intimidate me, and I'm just kind of standoffish, right? And so anyway, Sean Wayne eventually, you know, punches Red enough. He punches the money out of him. And then they have a pint, and everyone's happy. And I think that's it. Did I miss anything? That's the Quiet Man, right?
Yeah. So John Wayne is the Quiet Man, and so basically the plot, you summed it up really well, but the plot is Sean Thornton can't have sex with his wife until he beats up his brother-in-law.
Yes. That's the movie, huh? Right.
So, but he doesn't want to fight his brother-in-law because he used to be a boxer in the slag heaps of Pittsburgh, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And while boxing, he killed a man, right? He boxed a man to death, and that's why he doesn't want to fight anymore. But
a guy that looks exactly like his brother-in-law.
Yeah.
You notice that? I wondered if it was the same actor.
Oh, I bet it probably was, huh?
Oh, yeah. Man. So, but fortunately, there's a preacher that talks him into fighting again, and so you end up with that fight. And of course, if you don't kill someone while fighting, you become best friends, right?
How, I don't know. How hard is it to not kill somebody while fighting them? It couldn't be that hard, could it?
I've heard that like 78% of fights end in someone dead. So, I guess
yes,
you know.
Okay, well, I can't argue with that. It just seemed like Drago really, really wanted to murder Apollo.
You could see it in his eyes.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So we're talking about redhead. So the red hair here is Maureen O'Hara, right? Mm-hmm. So she kind of comes across early on as like this fiery, crazy, bad-tempered redhead. Does she carry that throughout the film? Or, like, what's your take on her?
Until Sean drags all the fight out of her
through like 5 miles of sheep.
Yes.
So one thing you left off right is that he gets the dowry from Red, and he gives it to Mary Kate. And what does she do with it? She throws it in the fire, right?
She doesn't throw it in the fire. Doesn't he throw it in the fire?
He throws it in the fire.
Yeah.
Well, but she opens the furnace door so that he can.
Oh, does she do that? I thought, I don't know, I mean.
I thought that was just him kind of exploring his misogyny a little more.
I mean, he does that plenty, but if you go back and watch it again, it is a mutual burning of the money. The point being that she didn't care about the money, it was the principle, right? It's not the money, it's beating up her brother.
Principle is another word for money, the original money.
Okay.
That bothers me. I feel like she should have been mad that he burned the money. Because
what did you just do?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Burned my money. So she does have that, like, when she's dishing up supper to the farmhands, she's like basically throwing the food at them, right? Like she's just constantly angry. I don't know, but
that's the red hair.
Yeah, but she gets tamed. so all it takes is a little wet graveyard kissing.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of feel, I don't know. I think she was worn down by John Wayne's dullness a lot. Like, that's what it takes to smooth her edges.
John, I appreciate your impression of John Wayne. It actually sounds more like a drunk Jimmy Stewart, but I'll take it. Thank you. This movie by Amazon was rated PG-13 for sexual content.
It was
steamy.
I'm guessing we're talking the John Wayne wet shirt makeout scene.
Yes. The Sean Wayne nipples.
If you look close enough, you can see Sean Wayne's nipples, yeah.
Maybe there's that, but there's also, I don't know, there's a weird... I mean, yes, she kisses him back. Yes, she agrees to marry him, but there's also just this weird kind of, like, weird consent thing going on. Like, you know, yeah. like she's always... She agrees to marry him, yes. And she kisses him in that one scene, yes. But they barely know each other, and he does a lot more toward her than I think is welcome. And I think that could be a PG-13 thing. I think it's just a weird fit, you know? It's just a little icky, just a little bit.
Yes. But they would have to rate, like, every romantic movie from that time period PG-13 then, because it seems like the height of... you know, the height of romance is to, like, kiss someone against their will from those days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, pinning their arms back to kiss them and then they melt in your arms, right?
Yes.
Yes, yes,
nothing
yes.
Sexier than being forced to kiss someone. So, is this the first time you guys had seen it? Josh, you've seen this before.
You know what? I had never seen it. Okay. Despite it being our mom's, one of her favorite movies.
So, let me ask this. Did you guys recognize the scene from E.T.?
Which no.
You probably also haven't seen in the last 30 years, right?
No, it's been a long time.
Oh, okay.
Was Elliot dragging E.T. down a hill?
Yeah. Oh, okay. That makes sense. I think that was in Mac and Me when he was just rolling Mac down the hill.
No, so Elliot's at school. E.T. is at home watching The Quiet Man, and he's watching the scene where she cleans his house and he catches her in the house, and she tries to leave, but he grabs her and yanks her back in and kisses her. And Elliot is at school, and he reenacts that scene with, like, some girl from his class.
Oh, that was the... I never even noticed that.
Right, right. I remember being really uncomfortable during that scene in E.T., too.
Like, why is Elliot non-consensually kissing that girl?
Yeah. I thought it was interesting, like, on the IMDb, that the first plot keyword is misogyny.
Yeah,
well, no. But it's, like, the fun, tender kind of misogyny.
It is. And then, like, at the end, when everything's great, right? Like, he beat up his brother-in-law. They got the money, and then they burned it, whatever. And then he came home, and, like, she's totally down with him. Like, now he's ordering her all over the place, right? Like, where's my tea? Where's my breakfast? Right? And so, like, I guess that's all fine now. I don't know. It's fascinating.
Yeah. I think she should have. I mean, you kind of, you know, you were kind of implying this whole thing. I couldn't get a grasp of her gingerness, because I don't understand what he did to tame her, so to speak. I don't know why she was. I mean, she was obviously, like, this, you know, really smart, intelligent, attractive woman in the town. I don't know why she was also considered, you know, like the gross person in town, I guess, that no one wanted. Right? I mean, because she must have been. Yeah, I mean, was it just because she was just a little too much more, like, she was more Irish than everybody else there?
Yeah, she was.
Is it that everyone was grossed out by her, or that no one could tame her?
Maybe that's it. I think that might be it. Yeah, and so there was a big wall. Like they had established this situation where she yells at everybody and she beats everybody up, and they're so used to it, they're like, and they didn't realize, you know, and so she did that as a little kid, and so they grew into that relationship together, and so there was never that courting period, you know, for all the other eligible young men in the town, yeah. Which I guess was those two IRA dudes. and so it took, you know, this newcomer to realize, to see her and appreciate her beauty, like, at first sight, you know.
And his patty fingers.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Like, with the holy water? Are you kidding me? it's a bold, sinful man he is. So it's interesting because, like, the first shot we have of Mary Kate, right? It's like kind of this grand background, and she's got I'm gonna get it backwards. It's either a red shirt and a blue skirt, or the other way around. But like, it has this weird from the ground angle. So it's like looking up through her nose. But yeah. Anyway,
yeah, it was a good shot. No,
so I'm trying to remember, because I know that John Ford, either he had to make this film in order to do something else that he wanted, or he had to make another cowboy film in order to be allowed to make this. But I do know one thing that's pretty fascinating. So, like, the producers insisted this movie get cut off at 2 hours. They said it's a 2-hour movie. And John Ford said, this isn't a 2-hour movie. It's going to go a little longer than that. They said, nope, 100% it's a 2-hour movie. So if you stop watching the film at 2 hours, it's like right as the fight is about to begin. So he screened it for the producers, and he stopped it at the 2-hour mark, and he's like, nope, that's it, 2 hours. And anyway, long story short, they wanted to see the fight, so the movie got extended to like 2 hours and 20 minutes or something.
It's kind of a long movie. I read that story.
That's interesting.
And that's cute. But, I mean, okay. And I don't know. Studio executives might be that dumb, but they just showed the same. He just showed the same movie again. You know, because they watched the movie and they said it. You know, it has to be 17 minutes shorter. And so then he just showed the movie again. He's like, well, you know, that's you know, at 2 hours, and so people want to stay in their seats. I mean, but the point is, I mean, if your job as a studio executive is to say, yeah, okay, I get it. This is a cute gimmick, John Ford. But, you know, maybe, you know, some of the Irish sing-along song, maybe that could have gotten – we could have, you know, done that. Maybe we could have gotten to the horse race sooner. Maybe not so many shots of the train. You know, maybe the drama between the two, you know, fathers in town, maybe some of that could go away. I mean
– John, you would have cut out Wild Colonial Boy?
Is that the song?
The best IRA song in the movie.
I don't want to, you know, I don't want to show my political hand, but yes.
Oh, this goes. So there's some fascinating things in this movie. So no, like, okay, so we haven't mentioned at all. What's his name? Michelin O'Flynn, played by Barry Fitzgerald, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who, if you've seen Bringing Up Baby, he's in that, and he's great in that too. But like, no one wants to marry her because her dowry's awful, right? But then like, she explains how good her dowry really is, and he's kind of impressed. But one of the items in her dowry is her buckles. Like, she's got a shoebox full of buckles or something. I really have no idea what we're talking about.
Sean was holding out for the buckles.
Yeah. I mean, and so like, I've checked with Barry, and unless she's hiding them, she never brought any buckles in this wedding.
So, okay, I asked this during our chat, but one thing I didn't understand, and by the way, I didn't really watch this movie very well, because, you know, we were watching it together. We were doing the Facebook Live thing where we watched the movie together, and I was mostly thinking of funny things to say while I was watching it. So therefore, I didn't pay too much close attention to actually, you know, actual plot points of what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand why John Wayne couldn't just pay £350. And have that be the dowry. If Maureen O'Hara was the only person who cared about it,
because it's not the money. I'm telling you, go back and watch it. They burned the money together. He didn't just take it out of her hands and burn it. Because the point is for him to stand up to her brother. I think that's the whole point of it. So John Wayne maybe could have lied to her and given her 350 pounds and said, yeah, I went and got it.
Yeah.
It probably would have come out. So, but like the, so, I mean, I think that's it. I really think that, it's not like the possession of the wealth, because he obviously has enough money, right?
Yeah.
Well, because as a boxer in the 1910s, living in the slag heaps, you're obviously a millionaire, right?
Right.
Well, she wanted him to fight.
Where did wealth come from?
Well, she wanted him to fight her brother, but like then, you know, after they beat each other up, they become like best friends.
Yeah.
I think so, another thing with me is I don't know, I'm kind of putting myself in this weird situation. Like, let's just say I go to Ireland. I meet this, you know, Irish lass who reignites my zest for living. and then I get married to her, and then she tells me, John Madsen, you have to beat up my brother. Like, okay, if it's John Wayne, it's like, fine, no, we all expect you to do that. But, like, shouldn't the movie be about her coming to terms with not being so, like, in love with violence? You know,
so
like before she's able to have sex, she like can't she just once, just for once, not watch someone else beat her up her brother?
Well, so I think Josh makes a good point. I don't think she can control it. It's the red hair.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think that's the underlying.
So,
theme
but
of the
one
movie.
Of the good things about the two brothers becoming or like the two becoming best friends after beating each other up. Is that now John Wayne can borrow that silky riding jacket anytime he wants.
You're treading on future things here.
Okay. That fight scene, I gotta say, was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a great fight.
Yeah, it just went on for so long. I feel like they fought like for the entire length of the town.
Yeah, it was again something out of Greek myth. I feel like their heroic fight, like that explains the landscape, you know, like certain, like 10 years later they'd point out this formation of rocks, and it's like that's where those two people rolled over and they formed that formation of rocks over there. It's like, yeah, it's that heroic of a fight. Also, it was like very similar to the They Live fight that just kind of kept going. These guys
Holy
are still
cow.
Fighting.
All right.
One more thing about the end, really quick. I will say this does seem very Ireland, because I've been to Ireland. It was for 6 hours. It was just a layover. It was just in Ireland, and I just wanted to. I'm like, okay, I have 6 hours here. I wonder, you know, what I can see of the place. And so I asked this guy, this random guy at the airport. You know, I can. Tell if he was a worker there or what, you know, but he was like in charge. I think he was in charge of the shuttles or something, because that's what I asked him. I'm like, hey, this shuttle that's taking us all away, you know, going into town, does it loop around? Does it like loop around? And he's like, you know, I think he said something like, yeah, mate, yeah, he was really confused by my question. And I was like, okay, well, I have a layover. I only have 6 hours. I want to see some of Dublin, you know? And so I'm just wondering if, you know, this shuttle loops back around and then I can catch my flight. And then he just looks at me and he goes, where are you going, mate? And I'm like, London, you know, cause that's what I really wanted to see. I wanted to spend a day in London, you know? And of course, and I was embarrassed because, you know, it's like, I don't know if he was IRA or what, you know, but, you know, and he just looked at me and he goes, mate, you're in Ireland already. You're in Ireland. Just cancel your flight. Come back here. We'll have a pint. We'll have a pint together. You know, so this random person just invited me to drink with him instead of going to London. And I'm like, okay, I like Ireland. This is a pretty cool place.
You should have just been more proactive and said, sir, take me to Killarney.
I should have. I don't know. I didn't know anything about Ireland then. And since then, the only thing I've learned about Ireland is a movie called The Quiet Man. Mm. So
it's pretty spot on, though.
Right. Apparently. And I don't know. Are we I'm not sure if John Wayne actually went to Ireland, because all the shots of John Wayne are in like front of a blue screen.
Didn't they say they filmed it all in Ireland? Like, that was one of the major, like, selling points of it?
Yeah, I think the majority of it was in Ireland. For whatever reason, he refuses to ride in a cart in Ireland, right? Because every single time he's riding in a cart, you've got the stupid blue screen.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess we see his stuntman getting up on the cart in the wide shot, and then it's like it cuts to just the blue screen. Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's the easiest way to do it. You know, so there's a lot of weird blue screen in this movie, which is weird because there were so many gorgeous Ireland shots as well.
Mm, yeah.
Hmm. So that's quite a man.
Yes, it was kind of a fun movie.
All right. Are you guys ready to talk about Betsy's Wedding?
I guess.
Go for it.
Okay, so this is the 1990 Ali Sheedy vehicle.
True story.
I thought it was
an
Alda vehicle.
Alan Alda.
But it was. First of all, I didn't know Ali Sheedy was in the movie. And also, second of all, it almost is more about Ali Sheedy, huh?
Yeah, so Betsy isn't in it a whole lot, right?
Yeah.
So 50% on the Rotten Tomato meter. That makes it rotten. I didn't mean to call it the Rotten Tomato meter, but it's what it is. I don't know how much it cost. It made $19 million. So there you go. But essentially, the plot here is that Alan Alda has sexy tiger dreams.
Yes.
and Madeline Kahn deals with the consequences. So their daughter Betsy's getting married. They want to throw a big wedding for her. Of course, the guy she's marrying, her parents are really rich. So, you know, the Alan Alda, who doesn't have a ton
because
of money,
she's marrying Blaine.
So anyway, they get kind of in a bidding war over the wedding, right? And so Alan Alda decides to throw this big wedding for her just to show that he's as good as his in-laws. And he lets his brother Joe Pesci, who every single one of his business dealings is tied to the mafia, help with the wedding. And then Polly from Rocky, who is the mafia, right, is kind of trying to like launder money through every single part of this wedding. But his henchmen that he like leaves to make sure that things are going the way they should.
Stevie D!
So, but Stevie D falls in love with Ali Sheedy, and he romances her throughout the film, and of course, like, stuff goes crazy with the wedding, and Catherine O'Hara is the wife of Joe Pesci, and she finds he's cheating. I like this part of the plot. Like, she knows he's been cheating, and she also knows he's been buying up all this property, so she buys the property she knows that he wants, and she figures out how much he's willing to pay, and then he ends up paying her, not knowing it's her, for the property. So she's like making millions of dollars off of him.
Off of her
and she's
husband.
Able to, she's able to divorce him afterwards, right? But
how dumb can Joe Pesci possibly, like, how does he not know someone else is purchasing these properties?
How's
that possible?
But what we do know is, it's like, he did attempt the art of seduction. Secretary, like, that scene where he's, like, lounging on the couch in his suit. He's so sexy. So, with the takeout Chinese. So, but the other part of this plot is that Molly Ringwald, the redhead, is getting married. And she's independent, and she's going to be herself. And at one point, her husband-to-be wants her to please her parents, but that doesn't work. And then they make up again because he wants her to be who she is. Because that's what she loves. But who she really wants to be is someone who makes all of her own dresses. They're all awful. She makes a lot of awful dresses. And then somehow, when like 5 minutes before walking down the aisle, she has her wedding dress and she remakes the wedding dress. And I don't know how she does this, but out of that material, she's able to create a top hat.
That's impressive.
Top hat
come on.
Came out of the script, right?
So, yeah. I think she makes cowboy boots too.
Yeah, and cowboy boots. impressive, like, right, very resourceful. But again, it's a Molly Ringwald dress, and I can't think of an outfit I've seen her in any movie that I didn't think was awful.
Is that part of Molly Ringwald's contract where
she will have to make the dresses?
She has to make the dress. Yeah.
So seriously, like in Pretty in Pink, the prom dress that she makes herself is so terrible. It's like really bad. Even by 80s standards, it is really, really bad.
Well, I will tell you this. I actually liked Molly Ringwald's like first two dresses, like she made, you know. Like she makes one to go to the opera or whatever with her in-laws, And, her husband says to his parents, he's like, okay, be careful, she made it herself, so, don't get too... And they freak out about it. And I remember thinking, I'm like, that's kind of cute. It's really puffy at the bottom.
Yeah.
But the top is really cute. You know, it looks like a legit cute dress. And then there was another dress that she made. And both times I, wrote in my notes, still better than the pretty in pink dress. Still better than the pretty in pink dress. Until she got to the wedding dress. The wedding dress, I was kind of like, okay, that's on par with the pretty in pink dress, I think.
I still think it's slightly better, but it's not good. But that's that minor part of the plot, right? But the real big part is Stevie D quits the mafia and joins the police department so that he can legitimately date Ally Sheedy, who is spinster cop, right?
Yeah.
Spinster
cop.
An act of true love.
Yeah.
So, here's what this movie reminds me of. Have you guys seen The In-Laws with Alan Arkin and what's his head? Peter Falk?
No, of course not.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you should. This movie is The In-Laws. The In-Laws was made in the 70s, I think. Mm-hmm. Except The In-Laws is really funny. And right. this movie is also about a wedding.
It is
a little Father of the Bride-y, I thought.
A bit, yeah.
Yeah. I think Father of the Bride, the remake of Father of the Bride came out the year after this or something. And so, yeah. No, this movie, I feel like it doesn't really, I don't know, commit to one of the many things it does. It doesn't really commit to, because Alan Alda hallucinates throughout the movie. And it's kind of he's mildly hallucinating, but it's not big enough to mean anything. And the wedding gets just a little bit crazy, but not super crazy. It's just kind of crazy. They're dancing in barefoot because there was a flood, and it's shucks. But yeah, it doesn't really swing very hard. Just kind of light. Yeah.
I totally agree. And the hallucinations, it's the movie starts with one and you feel like that's going to be a major point of the movie, is whatever's going on inside of his head that's making him have these hallucinations. But they don't really go to any effort to try to explain it, It just, I don't know. It, the whole movie to me seemed a little hurried.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there were five competing plots, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And none of them really got the attention it deserved, except for maybe Stevie D and Ally Sheedy, right?
If you listen to the Siskel and Ebert where they talk about Betsy's wedding, or watch the Siskel and Ebert where they talk about Betsy's wedding, that's exactly what they say. It's that was the part of the movie that worked, and that the movie should have opened up for Ally Sheedy and Stevie D. And I agree.
Yeah.
I think I agree. And it's kind of funny. It's funny seeing Ally Sheedy. And, I love Molly Ringwald, I do. But Ally Sheedy should have been more popular. She should have been the big John Hughes girl.
It's kind of a mystery.
I don't know how to explain that, yeah. Is it just John Hughes liked Molly Ringwald and that's how that went? Honestly, I don't understand.
Yeah. But the,
because I don't find Molly Ringwald that, charismatic.
No, but she is the iconic character, right, in most of these movies that they're in together.
Yeah, the weird thing about...
people associate her with him.
I mean, Molly Ringwald, she wasn't really that popular. I think they both could have been more popular. Molly Ringwald was only popular with John Hughes, right? She didn't do anything else that people remember besides the
John
Hughes movies.
Not really. And, so if you're talking Pretty in Pink and Some Kind of Wonderful, which are very similar films, Some Kind of Wonderful is... five times the movie Pretty in Pink is.
I like Some Kind of Wonderful way more, but what do you think is the most iconic of those two movies?
Do you guys have anything more to say about Betsy's Wedding?
Well, I'm curious where you guys think Betsy's Wedding falls in the pantheon of Molly Ringwald films.
So what have I seen? I've seen 16 Candles. I've seen Breakfast Club. I've seen Pretty in Pink. Oh, man. I've seen this.
This is your first... non-John Hughes Molly Ringwald movie.
Yeah. So of the four Molly Ringwald movies that I've seen, this is probably the fourth?
She had something with John Hughes. This movie, at least as far as John Hughes, or as far as Molly Ringwald goes, this movie shows how dull she can be, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yes. She was not great.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
She just comes across as whiny in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
Also, yeah. Why...
All women who complain are whiny, so there's that, I guess.
Shouldn't they have waited for her hair to grow back before they had a wedding? That's another concern that I had.
That concern is well-founded.
Yeah. And this is really why I wanted to watch Fresh Horses so bad, but Fresh Horses wasn't available, because Fresh Horses is not supposed to be good either. But she does have... In all the pictures I see, she has really fabulous, gorgeous hair. And she is... In all the clips I've seen, she's kind of... She is a little bit more fiery and gingery, because she's yelling at Andrew McCarthy. We did not get the ideal Molly Ringwald here.
Well, you know what's interesting? Like, I don't know, about a year or so ago, have you guys ever watched Riverdale?
One of my kids
Molly Ringwald's
it.
In Riverdale, that's right.
Yeah, like, she makes, like, she has, like, these appearances in Riverdale, right? And, like, with the first time she showed up in there, I remember just being delighted. Mm-hmm. And it's not because, you know, she wasn't great. It wasn't even a big role, you know? And, like, but it's not like... It was a memorable role she had or anything like that. It's just that there's a nostalgia associated with Molly Ringwald that I think obscures, like, that quality of actress she actually is.
Yeah.
So I 100% agree. Like, even now, right? I was going to say years from now, but even now, like, when people think of 80s movies, people think of Molly Ringwald, and no one's thinking of Mary Stuart Masterson.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Which, by the way, Mary Stuart Masterson as Watts, mm-hmm. is a phenomenal job.
Yes.
But we've done that.
Yes.
We
another great ginger in that movie.
Boy, you really hate Pretty in Pink, don't you? Because it, like, it's not as well remembered as Some Kind of Wonderful.
So I don't hate Pretty in Pink. I really don't. I think it's just fine. I love James Spader. I think Spader's so good in that movie. Yeah. That's one of the best movie villains of all time, because he's just, like, so chill about what a bad person he
Would
is.
Would I treat my parents' house this way if I cared about money?
But what's his head, the main good guy's okay, and Ducky's good. I guess I've read later that, like, John Cryer was not the first choice, right? It was supposed to be Robert Downey Jr.
Really, it wasn't Anthony Michael Hall.
It was supposed to be Robert Downey Jr. And the ending was supposed to be that Ducky and Molly end up together, but test audiences hated it, so they rewrote the ending.
See, sorry, we're diverging here on the Pretty in Pink, Some Kind of Wonderful thing here. I feel like they had to make both movies, because they mm-hmm. had to give the message, because they had to show both messages. I think, you know, you want Molly Ringwald to wind up with Ducky, but also you don't want to give the message that poor people and rich people can't get together. You know,
yeah.
Like, 'cause that's
and you
kind
don't want to give
them, yeah,
right. You don't want to give the message that the stalker wins.
Yes, and you don't. Yeah, no, totally true, totally true. And so it's like it's almost like, you know, this ideal romance. This idea we have, the ideal romance, it has to be covered over the course of two movies, really, because we kind of have to have it all, because otherwise, you know, there's like an element of messiness that you just can't get around, and so you need both for the fairy tale.
So, like, Ducky, his character today would be the person who, like Molly Ringwald's phone would never stop going off, right?
Yeah.
It would just be nonstop, and so I think the reversal of that role with Mary Stuart Masterson in Some Kind of Wonderful is so much better, where she's not, like, stalkery, right? She just, like, cares about him, and for the most part, she just kind of buries how bad it hurts inside. But anyway, none of this really has to do with Bessie's wedding. I guess we're just talking about how I don't love Molly Ringwald, but, you know, everyone's always... You're always going to remember Molly. That's all there is to it, huh?
True. Can I say how much I hate Andrew McCarthy?
Really?
Wow.
Yes.
Blaine?
I can't stand... The only person I like less maybe is what's his head from Betsy's Wedding, Jake Lovell.
Right, yeah, the guy who was in Nip Tuck years later.
The Nip Tuck guy,
yeah.
Yes. He's kind of unbearable.
It's fitting. I think Betsy and Jake, his name is Jake. That's the other thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Molly Ringwald's dating a guy named Jake, as in Jake Ryan. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah,
can you imagine an Andrew McCarthy in Back to the Future? Like, can you imagine?
Oh, gosh.
Ah,
that makes me throw up in my mouth a little bit.
So Andrew McCarthy is the weakest part of Some Kind of Wonderful, right? It's not even close.
Yeah. Pretty in Pink, you mean?
Oh, Pretty in Pink. Yeah, he's the guy that plays Blaine.
He's
Blaine. Yeah.
He's so an appliance. He's
name?
Not a name.
What's the actor's? I'm sorry. What's the actor's name from Eric Stoltz? I'm sorry.
Eric Stoltz. And
come on, don't disrespect the ginger during a ginger podcast.
Well, yeah.
Eric Stoltz is still the weakest part of Some Kind of Wonderful, but
which is too bad because he had just been fired from Back to the Future. So you're really piling on. You know
what? That movie's and Hardy Jens with two N's. What a great villain. Anyway,
yeah.
You guys go ahead and do yourselves a favor and go back to what like podcast 10, where we talk about Some Kind of Wonderful.
No. I'm sorry. I don't have it ready. It was not podcast 10. No. I'm seeing it live. You guys have to talk about something because I got to get the right number. It's not yours, mine, and theirs. It's Jared watches Star Trek for the first time.
Is it? Which one was it?
It was. The Skype I'm gonna window's before you in do. The way.
JR watches Star Trek for the first time, episode 180.
180, yes, okay.
So that's what friends are for.
So that's what podcast. Friends are for, yeah, when Watts and Keith are kissing, yes. So go back and listen to our talk about Some Kind of War. We really should talk about Pretty in Pink, though. Maybe we should have picked. I should have picked Pretty in Pink instead of Betsy's Wedding, obviously, because we've already talked about Pretty in Pink more than
Pretty
Betsy's Wedding.
More. So this is fascinating because I think when you and I have kind of different views of this podcast, right? And I think that we both fulfilled our view of this podcast, where I think you like to explore new films, and I guess you had never seen Betsy's Wedding too.
No, I never saw. I still haven't seen it.
So and I love exploring the new films, and I think that's really fun, but I also love like sharing my favorite films. And so like The Quiet Man I've seen 100 times, right?
Yeah.
I got Roberta, my wife and I saw they were showing Pretty in Pink on Valentine's Day at the theater here, and so we went and saw it. And I gotta say, it was just awesome, man.
Mm.
And it's not even because it's that great of a movie, kinda like we were talking about before. But it was awesome, man.
How was the crowd for Pretty in Pink?
It was, you know what? It was good and like really like laughing way more than it deserved.
Oh,
like everything was funny, you know.
Yeah, and the music in Pretty in Pink is just so good. That's a great soundtrack.
Yeah,
not as good as Some Kind of Wonderful soundtrack,
or Betsy's Wedding.
Or
it's a powerful
wedding.
Soundtrack.
What really got me. Never mind. I'm going to leave that for an award.
We should say, Josh, I don't know if you were aware of this, but freshman year, Roy and I, we put out flyers on campus saying, welcome to the first Pretty in Pink, Some Kind of Wonderful Compare Contrast Fest. And then we put our address on the flyer. And you know,
wait, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. But no one showed up.
No one showed up. And JR, you said you saw someone look at it and like take out a pen to write down the address, but then just like, no, I'm not going to this, and then walked away. Yeah, which is fortunate because if someone showed up, we would not have known what to do. We're like, oh, you seriously came? It was kind of a joke. It was one of our dumb things where we're just like, wouldn't it be hilarious if we send out flyers, you know, doing this because we actually had the event. But it was just us. It was just us. And I think...
It was...
Yeah, and I think Ammon was there. If anybody's listening to this, you know, guest on last week's Yours, Mine, and Theirs, you talked about Greek mythology. I think that guy was with us when we did this, but... Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we probably had Allison Welch with us. Maybe
Flinders.
Maybe Flinders. Was there.
Probably,
maybe Wyatt was there.
Probably James Galbraith and probably Autumn Eddy.
Yeah.
So you say it's a joke, but it's actually like one of those jokes that kind of crushed your feelings.
Well, we drowned our sorrow by probably watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre the next night or something.
No, it was a real thing that we did with friends, but the joke was that we would actually invite other people because we weren't socially equipped to just make random friends in college at this point. So yeah.
That's a good way to put it. We were definitely not socially equipped. So.
Yeah.
So anyway. That's awesome.
Yeah, but right. I guess we're done talking about Betsy's Wedding. We didn't say anything about the movie, which I guess is fine. It may have won some awards, maybe.
The material was a little thin to carry a lot of discussion.
Yeah. You know? I wrote down, they're dancing barefoot in mud. Swamp foot. That's what I wrote down.
So, John, you wanted me to remind you that you had something to say from the Blank Check podcast for Zero Dark Thirty. I don't know when you want to insert yourself.
Okay. Good transition. Perfect. Okay, 3, 2, 1. Okay, now I'm speaking. Now. Okay. So, okay, I was just listening to the Blank Check podcast where they talked about Zero Dark Thirty, and they said something that I thought was super funny in that when Osama bin Laden was assassinated, like in May 11th, they said a week earlier was the White House Correspondents' Dinner where Osama bin Laden, where Trump was there, and Osama bin Laden and I think Seth Meyers and a few other people were just roasting Trump at the...
Osama bin Laden was roasting Trump?
Sorry, yeah. Barack Obama. Sorry. Barack Obama, the President of the United States at the time, and Seth Meyers and a bunch of people, it was the White House Correspondents' Dinner, they were just pretty much making fun of Donald Trump this whole time. You know,
it's probably the birther stuff, right?
Yeah, you know, it was around then, and I think this may have been the time that Seth Meyers said, like, when he was talking, he like specifically addressed Trump and said, "Please, please, please run for president. It will be hilarious." You know, like that kind of thing. And so, anyway, they pissed Donald Trump off like a week earlier. A week goes by. Osama bin Laden is assassinated by SEAL Team 6. And the White House Twitter goes out that says, Barack Obama, President Obama will address the nation in a specific important press conference regarding this situation. You know, we weren't sure. We weren't totally sure. And, you know, The Rock tweeted out, hey, we got him, you know, because The Rock had, like, a relative, like, who knew. And so, like, it was kind of spoiled. So we kind of knew that Barack Obama was going to announce that we got Osama bin Laden, right? And he announced the time, and the time, it was, you know, like, you know, an hour or two in advance, and it was like 9:50 or something. And apparently that time that Barack Obama set for the press conference where he would announce that, yes, we got him, we got the terrorist, Osama bin Laden, it was during the last 10 minutes of the season finale of a little show called The Apprentice. And so, like, they said that, like, Barack Obama was on a roll, like, beating up Donald Trump, like, from a week earlier. And so their theory is that if we didn't get Osama bin Laden the day that we got him, then Donald Trump would not have wound up running for president because ultimately the reason he ran for president was a vendetta against, like, Barack Obama for, first of all, making fun of him, and then second of all, like, taking all the wind out of the sails of the season finale of The Apprentice.
The last 4 years were the fault of SEAL Team 6.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, SEAL Team 6 ruined the last 4 years. Well, depending on your point of view. It could be that they should be further hailed as the greatest heroes of American history, depending on which side you're on, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I just thought that was a funny story, so I wanted to share that with you guys.
That's awesome. And you know what? That's perfect segue because Barack Obama actually saw the real director's cut of a Zero Dark Thirty as it was actually happening.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
That's perfect. Yeah.
So Zero Dark Thirty, I really think this is a good movie. I can sum it up pretty quickly. It is just the hunt for Osama bin Laden after 9/11, and kind of follows the Jessica Chastain character, who I think is in reality an amalgamation of like a bunch of different people who kind of helped this to happen. But, you know, it's just them tracking, trying like crazy to find Osama bin Laden while these attacks keep happening. And they finally get a break. SEAL Team 6 goes in there and takes care of business.
Cleans house.
Yeah. I don't know that there's that much else to talk about in terms of the story, but there are lots of things to talk about just in terms of the movie itself, and including what I hope we can get to is kind of the controversy around this about, you know, about the torture scenes and about the accuracy of that stuff. But anyway, fascinating movie. I've seen it, you know, I saw it two or three times when it first came out, and I saw it, you know, I watched it again in anticipation of this, and it is really like engrossing, and I thought it was great acting and just well directed, and I really like it.
Now,
go ahead.
You brought up, so my first question is, you brought this up. Would you guys say the movie did the movie do a good job of condemning torture? I mean, I don't know how to phrase it, but like, ethically, morally, was the movie good enough, you know, in its depiction of torture?
So it's interesting, and I've been thinking about this a lot, because I think you see her character who starts the movie really timid about torture, but right? Mm-hmm. But you see her like progressively get number and number about it, to where she's like demanding it, right?
Yeah.
Like trying to goad the guy into like, get in there and do your thing, right? And I think that part maybe is like, hey, this is like, torture's bad, like, and you become desensitized to it, and it's obviously like what's happening to her character. But also, like, they kind of like, at least with the one guy that they focus a lot of time on early, they kind of make the point that it worked, right? That they did get some information from him after like a very long amount of time. So, and it's interesting because you hear, different reports and studies about whether or not torture actually works, whether or not like people like just end up giving you bad intel instead of good intel because they just want the torture to stop, right?
Right.
So I don't really know, but I found that interesting. But I also thought, like, because the directors of this film knew that we were going to be watching like torture, right? So the opening credits starts with the phone calls from 9/11 of the people who were about to die, right? Mm-hmm. And right. I thought that like they're doing this to kind of maybe help us through the torture. I think there's a link there. Right, well, right. Just to say like, hey, you're gonna see torture, but remember like these were the stakes. This is what we were trying to do. This is what we were going after. And I think the torture is easier for as an audience to digest it after having that reminder, and especially because they juxtapose the opening credits with that first torture scene. It happens almost immediately,
right?
So I could be wrong, but I felt like that was maybe intentional.
I think so too, but I think though, I mean, I think you would agree those torture scenes are hard to watch,
yeah.
You know, and it's like jarring and like affecting, and like it's. In my mind, it was not at all glamorizing it. In fact, with me, it had kind of the opposite effect, you know, where it's like, oh, you know, how can we do that to a human being, even, you know, regardless of the circumstances, you know? Like, so for me, it kind of had the opposite effect of what some people were, I think, were concerned about, which was the glamorization of it.
Yeah. So it's interesting because you hear the story about how Saddam Hussein was found. And the guy they got the break from, the tip that broke it, the interrogator didn't use any torture at all, right? Because that particular interrogator just believed that it's not useful, it doesn't get you what you want, and it was just building this relationship. And I think like that maybe they like had compromised the guy's family or something, but there was like this guy was not physically tortured, and we got Saddam Hussein. So I don't know there, but.
Well, okay, there's kind of some unsaid things in the movie that I find really interesting. It probably would have been just not very sincere if, like, some character in the movie said, we don't do this, we're better than this, we're Starfleet, you know, we don't torture,
yeah,
you know,
right.
And like, you know, in a dress, like, no one does, because everyone in the movie is just, they're doing their jobs, and they're ensconced in it, and they're just like, they will do whatever they have to do, and it's just like, I don't know. Everyone kind of doesn't really,
right?
Maya included, they're not good people. They just have something that they're desperate to get done. You know,
and I think it's important that they show it. And I thought like one of the best scenes was when they juxtaposed like the press conference of Barack Obama saying we don't torture, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and the guys who are watching the TV in the background, yeah, those are the torturers, right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, okay, but here's the crazy thing, though, because, okay, the facts are, they're looking for this guy, Abu Ahmed, right?
And the courier.
He's the main source to all the information, the courier of Osama bin Laden, Abu Ahmed, and so they get, using torture early in the movie, you know, that person's name, and they corroborate it with a bunch of other, you know, detainees, and they have that information, and then the key information that they get from the main guy who's getting tortured is something else. It's like, okay, you know what? The attack happened, so let's pretend that he gave us the information, and let's congratulate him, and let's not torture him, and let's use that tack. And then that's where they get the next piece of important information. And then later in the movie, they say, okay, you know what? The guy we were looking for all along, Abu Ahmed, we had that information all along, right? And so, like, one thing the movie does is it presents all of the things, all of the information that we received, and no one character in the movie comes out and says it, but all of the information was there without the need for torture, right? But no one, like Maya never says, like when she's crying at the end of the movie, you know, that might be what she's thinking of, but she doesn't come out and say, like, we didn't have to torture all those people. We didn't have to do it because we had the information here and here. She doesn't say that, but we know that based on all the information that we've collected from the movie.
Hmm. So, I mean, it's interesting, right, that, like, so you have, when this movie came out, like, you know, there were certain, you know, senators, you know, John McCain among them, you know, who were really critical, you know, because they were adamant that none of the intel that they got came from torture techniques and stuff like that. And, at the same time, you know, that this, the screenplay for this was written, you know, it was just taken from direct conversations with CIA members and stuff like that. I mean, that's how it was written. And the Catherine Bigelow, you know, she never really backed down from her claim that this stuff actually did happen and that they did get information that way, you know? And so I was like, it's interesting. I was just reading through some of the, you know, some of the articles that were written back at the time. And I came across this one by the guy who was in charge of the counterterrorism unit, back then during that time. And he was in charge of like the black sites and the enhanced interrogations and stuff like that. And what he says, you know, and I mean, you know, he's got his biases as well, you know, but he said that they had a guy, that they got information about that courier from, not through waterboarding, but through other enhanced interrogation stuff. And he said that it didn't lead to his arrest, you know, or it didn't lead to them having any actionable stuff. They just got the name from him. But he said that because they had the name, they were able to kind of use that, like talking with like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, you know, who tried to cover for him apparently, but ended up kind of giving him up. And so it maybe wasn't directly tied to it, but this guy at least says that there was at least something to it.
Well, I want to say, I don't know, this is me being ideal and dumb, and, you know, this will never happen. But, okay, first of all, here's what I believe. I believe torture is effective because first of all, I don't know how it couldn't be. Like, kind of watching a scene of anybody be, like, I feel like I have ideals, and I feel like I know what is right, but I feel like if someone starts hurting me just in the little bit, I will turn on whatever I believe. Like, that's just, you know, I mean,
yeah. It's that guy there,
you know, so. And it's like, and I feel like I can't be blamed for it because you know what, I'm being tortured. And I feel like I can't blame anybody else for compromising what they believe if they're being tortured. And I feel like, you know, obviously someone can give false information, but I haven't studied this, but I don't really see how hard it would be able to ask questions and gather information in a way that can be verified, you know, after you do it.
And so, like, the interesting part of that, right, is if you give false information, and then once that information is found to be false, then you're in even bigger trouble, right? So I don't know if you guys ever saw the movie, was it called The Recruit, about, like, I think so, right? But, like, they make the point that, like, everyone breaks under torture, right? Like, it's just a matter of time. So, like, if you're deciding, am I going to be tortured for 10 minutes or am I going to be tortured for 3 weeks, right? Because of, like, it,
right.
And the point of torture isn't to kill you, because, I mean, a lot of those people probably, you know, you're in a situation where you just wish you would die. Mm-hmm. But you're kept alive, of course. Does that mean that torture is 100% effective? I don't know. I don't, but like, even if torture is like super effective, I don't think that justifies
it. Well, that's the thing. And that's what I want to say. I kind of hope torture is effective so that we cannot do it, you know? Like, so that we can know. And I don't know. This is really, you know, self-righteous thing to say and to think. But if torture is effective, then I think it means more that we don't do it. Rather than, I think our big reason for not doing it is like, oh, it's not giving us accurate information. And I don't think that's good enough reason to not do it. I think we just shouldn't do it because it's
wrong,
you know?
We're not going to torture humans because it's not very effective. If it were effective, we'd be all about the torture.
Yeah, yeah. I don't like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So morally, I would be very against torturing for any reason, you know? And, like, I thought this movie showed why that's probably a good position to have, you know? I mean, just to do something like that to another human being is abhorrent, you know? But what I don't like for people to try and say that, well, no information came out of torturing just because they're anti-torture, you know? I mean, I think it really happened. I think they probably did get some information out of that. Doesn't mean you should do it necessarily, but it doesn't change the reality of it.
Well, and then the position I put myself in for this is, like, I can be against it all I want, but if my daughter's life was on the line and there was a man who had the information I knew,
you were in some kind of taken situation. Yeah.
What would I be willing to do to that human to save my daughter's life, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, and that's, you know, the director of the counterintelligence unit that I was telling you about, like, he said something like that. He's like, you know, there's some things, you know, that we don't do anymore that we did back then, but, you know, and we may or may not be proud of them, but he's like, but the thing is you got to remember that time and place, you know. He's like, there was so much pressure to find Osama bin Laden because these attacks kept happening, right? And the movie shows that, you know, that it might make people who otherwise would, you know, would recoil at the thought of torturing somebody, like, think twice about it. And so I thought it did a good job of kind of showing the murkiness, the moral murkiness of these sort of decisions that people have to make in extremely pressurized situations.
The movie pretty much says, I mean, and a lot of people would disagree with this because a lot of people say, no, we didn't do this. But the movie pretty much says, we did it. This is what we did.
Yeah.
And it just documented it. And it was... and it was just passionless the way it did it. And I think it makes sense that, like, at the beginning of the movie, Jessica Chastain kind of winces a little bit. And she's kind of, you know, she's a tough-as-nails, you know, broad or whatever. And, like, the opening scene,
John, we don't call chick broad, okay?
She's a tough-as-nails chick, right? And, and I don't know, this might be... I don't know if you guys caught this or not. I don't know if this is a thing at all. But I feel like the opening scenes, she says all the words. She says all the tough things. She says, you know, she yells at people in the beginning. But I feel like her voice was kind of quavering a little bit. Like, she was a little bit timid. But by the end of the movie, she's just galactically loud and galactically powerful.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for better or worse, and, you know, the good that she did, you know, she... like, the whole experience of, you know, 10 years looking for this guy using her method, she was certainly hardened during the course of it.
Yeah. So, yeah. Josh, you said that her character is an amalgamation. So is that similar? Did you guys see the Unabomber with the guy who plays Vision?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was good.
Where I think it's the same thing, right? Like there was, like, one actor that was the FBI guy that, like, was doing all the breakthroughs, but it, like, turned out that, no, there was actually an analyst team, and he kind of, like, symbolized all of them, right?
Well, this counterterrorism, the guy that ran it that I was referring to, he said that, he's like, there was not just one woman like that, but he said, but interestingly enough, like, of the group of people that did it, it was primarily women.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, that tracked him down, so
kind of
cool.
I did read that, like, one of the SEAL Team 6 guys said that the CIA operative woman that they dealt with was the bravest woman that he had ever known. So, like, there is that, like, So that, like, there was a single individual woman that dealt, you know, with SEAL Team 6, and so I don't know how much it broadened after, you know, because obviously, I mean, Maya was doing all sorts of things throughout the movie.
Right.
She was doing all tons of stuff. So, I mean, all that stuff had to be combined a bit. But, you know, I think, yeah,
right.
There was at least one top secret woman that I know
so,
about.
Well, and obviously that lady who got that was there in Pakistan with Maya, who was killed in the, you know,
in the suicide bombing.
I mean, that's a real person.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this whole, what's really fascinating about this story is because the story kind of reveals everything that was happening over this span of, like, how many years was this? 7 or 8 years? I don't know. It was a while, right?
10.
But like,
it was
right?
10 years. Yeah,
she's been doing it for 10 years.
So those of us who, like, those of us, I mean, we just assumed that he was lost, right? That no one had any idea where he was. And, like, but they were, like steadily tracking him all this time. And then, like, the point of, like, where they made their first assessment that he was 60% likely in that building, and then, like, almost another half year goes by.
Yeah.
Right, where they are pretty certain that he's there. And so,
well, that,
I mean, it's amazing to me that there was not, like, a leak. Keep it locked down so tight.
Yeah, no, that's
how crazy is it that he was living, you know, like, 3/4 of a mile away from their West Point.
Yeah. So also, like, I didn't know. So Chris Pratt was on SEAL Team 6, and so that's cool because I'm assuming he just got to play himself.
Right. Well, I mean, it's good to have him on SEAL Team 6 because he has that space helmet and those rocket boots and stuff, and he can talk to raccoons. I mean, I don't know who else you're going to have on SEAL Team 6, you know.
That's who you want.
Yeah.
Covering your 20.
Well, okay, no, this is the other big thing I want to talk about, because I think this is super interesting to me, because it's, okay, the facts are facts. This is a true story, so that's just kind of where it lay. But I weirdly don't know what this movie is about, in a weird way, because the story of this is that Kathryn Bigelow, it's like 2007 or something, she's writing this she's getting Mark Boll to write it with her, and she's preparing to make this movie, and, you know, they're just starting to film in 2011, and the movie is going to be about Osama bin Laden getting away in, you know, in the Pakistani caves in that one battle thing, you know, and he gets away, and then her relentless search for Osama bin Laden over the course of the next 10 years, and then, like, the next day, SEAL Team 6 happens, Osama bin Laden is assassinated. So her movie is weirdly sabotaged by the real life. Because, like, what it's supposed to be about, I think, is kind of like Zodiac, if you guys ever saw Zodiac. It's about, like, what it does to all these people, and should we still be searching for this guy who might be dead? He may have died of liver failure, he may have done, you know, and...
Right.
You know, is it worth chasing this ghost, you know, to put these things at rest? And, you know, what's the cost of that? And then, like, vindication. And so I think there's this weird imbalance of tone, because it's not so much like, yeah, rah, rah, go USA, we got him. But it's kind of like, okay, what's the cost of getting this person?
Right.
I think 10 years from now, 20 years from now, you know, kids are going to watch this movie and they're going to look at it a little bit differently than we do, because we're still excited. Like, because we needed this. Like, our generation needed to know that this monster who attacked us is gone now. But historically speaking, I think it's just going to be just a fascinating time capsule, because I think kind of what the movie is supposed to be is maybe the banality of searches like this, but history proved it wrong.
Well,
you know?
What's his Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights? He's the bureau chief there in Pakistan. You know,
yeah.
He said as much, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's like, you know, this isn't even about trying to find bin Laden anymore. You know, we've got so much other stuff
to
worry
about.
He's
old news. You know, let's get over the bin. Like, I kind of think the movie was supposed to be his perspective, but he's kind of the bad perspective, really.
Right.
Yeah. Also, the other thing I have to mention is, did you guys realize that Abu Ahmed was Matt Berry from the IT Crowd and What We Do in the Shadows? That was surprising.
What?
Okay, it wasn't really, but it looked just like him.
Okay.
Remember when he drove through town saying, If you have a package for Osama bin Laden, let me know. I will be circling in my SUV vehicle.
Well, that's why they had a hard time finding him, because he was able to disguise himself as Jackie Daytona. Yeah, this movie would have been better with Matt Berry. So
yes.
Yeah, except he's not a ginger. He's no ginger.
Yeah, well, not everyone can be.
This movie made $133 million, and it only cost $40, so that's good news. Tied with The Quiet Man at 91%, but also Zero Dark Thirty was a Best Picture nominee.
Yeah.
And was this in the days of 5 or 10 nominees? Was this still 5 nominee period?
I think it was 10, because it was the year Argo won, I think. Although I think Jessica Chastain won the Golden Globe, apparently, for best actress.
So I loved Argo, by the way. I thought Argo was really good.
Yeah,
I remember too. Really I liking it. I haven't seen it since. It was good to find an excuse to watch this again, because I kind of feel like this is I don't know. It was like, I mean, who watches Zero Dark Thirty again? We do, because there's a redhead in it.
So I went ahead and bit angeled the naughtiest language, and I watched this with my kid or some of my older kids, and it was good.
I mean,
I taught them enhanced torture techniques, so
right.
Were they freaked out by that?
So I mean, I wasn't watching this with my 10-year-old, right? But like my oldest kids, and so I mean. Maybe, but I mean, they play Fortnite, and all that game is torture, right? So, I do want to say, though, Josh, then we should probably bring you back for when we do the category that has us watching Hostel and Saw and whatever other favorite torture movie there is. So,
yes, wherever there's torture, there I will be.
Oh, boy.
How much torture did VidAngel cut?
I didn't cut the torture. All I cut was the bad language.
Oh, you can cut it.
Have you never used VidAngel? Like, every movie has like 300 filterable moments. It's like really precise.
I'm waiting for the version where it just cuts out the wholesome things.
The wholesome? Vid Satan? I don't know.
Yeah.
Like the love Satan. Between Ali Sheedy and Stevie D?
Yes. Oh, you want to cut that out.
Oh, one more thing I have to mention about Zero Dark Thirty that I found interesting. Sure.
Yeah, I hardly made any comments at all, by the way, because I just like was watching it, and it was really good. And
yeah.
So
I know, yeah, it's straightforward. It's good. Catherine Bigelow, you know, we should watch more Catherine Bigelow movies. This reminds me of back when we watched K-19, The Widowmaker, on our very first, you know, theme. This was another Star Trek podcast, I think. We'll have to link to that.
No, that was the first one, wasn't it? No, you're right. You're
it was the
right.
First time we did it on Star Trek, and then we morphed yeah. into the other one, yeah.
Yeah, so Catherine Bigelow, I never saw The Hurt Locker, which was also a best
good movie.
Oh, right? Yeah, Hurt Locker, because this came out right after The Hurt Locker. And I think this is really good, but I think people were just a little bit disappointed, because I feel like The Hurt Locker kind of... It like had somewhat of a message. Like that's the thing. Zero Dark Thirty, I think she's just presenting it, and it's really good, and that's noble and everything. But Hurt Locker, I felt like kind of had something more to say a little bit. That's just me.
Hurt Locker was good.
Yeah, I liked Hurt Locker a lot. I think I prefer Hurt Locker if I have to compare the two. Mm. But yeah, Hurt Locker is a great movie. Okay, so the other thing about this movie is, if you remember right, the guy that they're torturing. And they're torturing him, and they say, when is the attack going to be? When is the attack going to be? And he goes, Saturday, you know. And they're like, what? And then the guy says, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Sunday, Monday, you know. And he changes right. all the things. And so then the next scene, it's May 29th or 24th. I can't read my writing. 2004. That's the Khobar, Saudi Arabia shooting spree attack, where the guy just went into the hotel and just... shot it up, right? Mm. I think that's what they were asking about. I looked it up because I saw that the date was May 29th, 2004, and I checked it out. Indeed, that was a Saturday. So, kind of an interesting thing. I don't know if the movies wanted to point this out, but they were torturing him. They did get the proper information, but it wasn't clean because he changed his mind. But Saturday was the first day he said. That was the first thing he said, and it was correct, but then he changed his mind.
So I'm certain you know that Catherine Bigelow directed Point Break.
Oh, yes, of course. She's a great director.
Did you know that she directed Touched by the Hand of God, the New Order music video?
Okay, what? You got me there. That's amazing.
She directed a New Order music video back in 1987. Yeah.
Man, she's the best director of our time.
Wow. That's awesome.
That's good news. Good news.
All right. Well, you guys have anything else to say, or you want to start doing some awards? Because, I mean, we've got at least 4 hours of awards ahead of us.
I'm fired up for awards.
All right, let's do awards.
Okay. All right. Best title, John.
The Quiet Man? but also, I don't know who the Quiet Man is.
Yeah, they don't really answer that question, do they? Josh, what's your favorite title?
I like Zero Dark Thirty. Like, I thought that...
I didn't pick Zero Dark Thirty because my understanding is the term is O Dark Thirty, and that's
so,
what they say.
When I hear the title, when I hear Zero Dark Thirty, I just think of Michael Skarn.
Threat Level Midnight.
Threat Level Midnight. Zero Dark Thirty. Yeah.
But the term, right? Okay. JR, tell me if I'm wrong about this. This is from my stepfather.
Because of all the SEAL teams I'd participated in.
My stepfather, who was in the Air Force, said that. Like, whenever it was, like, an early, like, the time you don't want to do a mission is O Dark 30, which is, it could mean 12:30 midnight, but it's also just a general term for when it's darkest, or, when, like, a nighttime raid is at O Dark 30, and it's just, it's kind of like beer o'clock, or beer 30, or something, but it's just a general term. But it's O Dark 30, not Zero Dark 30, so I disqualified the title of Zero Dark 30.
Well, that's kind of a major fail, isn't it? If they got the name of the movie wrong?
Yes, it's a major fail. It's
okay, let me fix a lot of my words.
They got members of the Navy in, and they're like, and they tortured them to know what it was called, but they were given improper information.
They're like, zero.
It's Zero four, Dark 30. Yeah.
Nine.
Anyway, I don't know. So, but I picked The Quiet Man. Quiet Man, best title.
Quiet Man.
Yeah, The Quieted Man. The best movie poster, Josh.
Best movie poster. So I really did some research on this, and it is the Germany Quiet Man poster that shows John Wayne dragging Maureen by her hair. The French poster shows John Wayne throwing her down a hill, and so it's interesting, like, all the foreign posters are like playing up that part of it, and then the American poster is him like carrying her all tenderly, but I'll go for the German one. German Quiet Man.
Okay,
all right, John, what do you think?
I love when they spend money on black ink. So Zero Dark 30, because the other two posters have too much white space.
Okay. So I went with The Quiet Man. The poster we used,
German?
It's hard. No, I haven't seen the German abuse poster. it looks like, I can't tell, are they dancing? Are they fighting? It's hard to say. But she's got that green shirt and the red skirt, and then like there's like a Christmas wreath of other characters that go around the title card. Let's see. How about best tagline?
Again, from the German Quiet Man poster. Ein Yankee in Ireland.
JR, make Josh follow the rules. Okay.
What do you got, John?
I have from Betsy's Wedding, the wedding picture doesn't always tell the real story.
And then, like, the movie's not about that at all, right? So, I chose the same tagline, but I was tempted to, like, choose John Ford's Greatest Triumph. It's as the same one. Okay, so let's see your alternate taglines, John.
Okay, my alternate tagline for The Quiet Man is, he's quiet now, but the sex will be loud!
All right, Josh. Go ahead. Next movie.
Betsy's Wedding. Molly Ringwald's not done ruining dresses. And then for Zero Dark 30, I have, is this obsession worth it? Oh, wait. We got Bin Laden. Nice. USA. USA. I'm going to quit my job at the tagline factory and just get drunk.
All right, Josh, what do you got?
So, for The Quiet Man, I have a tale as old as time. An American returns to his ancestral lands to win the heart of the woman of his dreams by dragging her down a hill by her hair.
Okay. And then for Betsy's wedding, I have Alan Alda in his steamiest role. And then okay. I don't have one for Zero Dark Thirty. I spaced it.
Oh, I'm, okay. So for the Quiet Man, I've got You've Got to Fight for Your Right to Intercourse. For Betsy's wedding, I just have Zany Mafia Wedding Fun. And for Zero Dark Thirty, I have Binders, because I don't know if you noticed, but there were like 3,000 binders in that movie, like just scattered everywhere.
There were a lot of binders full of women.
Okay, best opening credits, Josh.
So I put Zero Dark Thirty because there really are no opening credits. Like, there's those, the 911 calls that you mentioned that are pretty affecting, but there are no credits. They don't do it until the end.
Well, what do you got, John?
I went with Quiet Man because it's so yellow and there's an Irish castle with a, like a lofting lake.
Yeah. So I went with the Teach Me Tiger montage from the beginning of Betsy's wedding.
Thanks.
Okay. John, your favorite your favorite technology, John.
Okay. I went with... I'm trying to read... Okay. Sorry. Runner-up. Stevie D's Sweet Vet. And then you guys are probably going to pick this, so I'm not going to say my second runner-up. I'll say it at the end. But I think the winner is in The Quiet Man, the harpsichord that she has.
Oh,
like, wouldn't it be cool to have a harpsichord?
Yeah, did you find one?
I didn't look.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, Josh, what's your favorite technology?
So the best tech I saw was the beating stick that fish lady gives to John Wayne to use on Marie. On Maureen O'Hara.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Like, giving him a stick.
All right. So, built in Area 51, so I assume it's alien technology, yes. The space stealth choppers.
Yeah, I put night choppers. Night choppers. Yeah, those are cool. Apparently, right, apparently they, since they blew up the night chopper in real life, they had to recreate them for the movie based on photos of the blown up chopper, like footage. And apparently people like in the military were like, you know, they saw the ones in the movie. They're like, yeah, they got it pretty good.
All right, Josh, what's your favorite name from any of these movies?
The Widow Sarah Talani.
Very good. All right.
What about you, John?
Micheline Og Flynn.
So I'm going to change my pick. That was my pick, but I'm going to go with the Red Squire, Red Will Danaher.
Red
Will Danaher. Okay.
Yeah, so I got to fix that.
Very good. Nice. Adjusting your records. I need to have those
records. Yeah, doing that. Okay, food. Your favorite food, John.
All right. From The Quiet Man, it's buckets of water to the face. You know, it's like, you know, we have to keep fighting. Here's another bucket of water to the face, and they wake up and keep fighting. Yeah.
All right, Josh, what do you got?
My favorite food was the monkey ice cream from Zero Dark Thirty, where that dude is just shamelessly sharing his ice cream cone with a disgusting monkey.
A lick for you, a lick for me.
Yeah.
Does that remind you of when Bill, our father, would like find Norm eating his cereal out of the bowl, and he would just push Norm aside and then dig back in? Oh man. Okay, so my favorite is any dinner at the Danahers, right? Like, holy cow, potatoes and meat and bread and that's a every meal was a feast. So, yeah. All right, your favorite outfit, Josh.
So I have two of them. I have a feeling one of them, one of you guys will probably say. So I'll say Alan Alda's loose fitting khakis.
Very good. Honorable mention. I already mentioned to Betsy's explosion in a dress factory dress, where the top is black and then it's puffy purple at the bottom. But the winner, obviously, is Red's two-tone, like, jockey outfit. That he rides on. The silky jockey outfit.
it's so silky. Yeah. That's like, it's like the wind just shears right off its
wound. Okay, right, right. It just falls right off him when he's riding a horse. It just slides right off.
Okay, so like early on in our marriage, we thought it would be fun to get silk sheets, and they're awful. Like, if you like sit down too fast, you slide right off the bed. It's just so anyway.
What was yours?
Yeah, my favorite outfit is Mary Kate's field dragging kit. So.
Well, hey, you guys didn't mention my runner-up, so can I say that one?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That would be John Wayne's thin white wet T-shirt contest shirt.
Oh, very good.
Oh boy. Okay, Josh, who's the best alien?
Best alien was definitely Jessica Chastain as a ginger in Pakistan, because there are no gingers in Pakistan.
That's pretty good. What do you got, John?
I have SEAL Team 6. They were aliens too in Pakistan when they did their mission. I don't think they were Pakistani citizens.
So I'm not sure on this one. I put Sean Tartan. I know he's originally from Ireland, but then he spent most of his life in Slag Heap, USA. So I don't, like, what does he actually have Irish citizenship? I don't know, but I picked him as my alien because he's the fish out of water in Ireland.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, your favorite special effects, John?
I'm going to go with Alan Alda's Ghost Dad.
That was weird. Like there was maybe a half an hour left in the movie, and I was like, is he a ghost? Is he real? What did that have to do with the movie?
Yeah,
right. No,
it was the weirdest thing to throw incomplete. In.
By the way, if you listen to the WTF with Alan Alda, where Alan Alda really quickly says he had a miserable time directing Betsy's Wedding. I think the whole thing got away with him for reasons like that. There are just a lot of just loose things that just didn't come together. And I think that's,
don't they say this was like loosely based on his daughter's actual wedding?
It does say that, like in the trivia, which makes sense.
He was haunted by his father's ghost during. I don't know. It was weird.
See,
it was
like they had a. It was something not edited out of the screenplay, you know, in time.
It's like they had an ideas meeting and nothing was turned down for this film.
Yeah.
Do you think Alan Alda's wife can verify the tiger dreams?
All right. So, did both of you go for best special effects?
I did.
I didn't. So I just put the whole night vision raid on Bin Laden's compound. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So and I wondered, like, those helicopters, right? There's no lights on for those helicopters to fly in. They're flying in the dark. So are the pilots wearing night vision goggles? I don't understand how flying a helicopter in the dark.
Well, one of them wasn't.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There you go. So I put in The Quiet Man when they're at the they're at the cemetery, and it's windy and it's rainy. And how do we know it's windy? Because someone right off camera lowers a tree right into the shot and shakes it a little bit.
Sure,
super windy tree.
Yeah.
So, all right, favorite location, Josh?
Castletown, Ireland.
Ooh, what do you say, John?
I have Innisfree, Ireland.
So I also have Innisfree. My honorable mention is the slag heaps. it wasn't too bad. So
I mean, it's beautiful, but and also cheap lodgings in Innisfree, at least based on the name.
Favorite song, John?
Something in Ireland in a town of Castermaine. Something. They sang a tavern song. Something bred in Ireland. I can't read my writing. Anyway, they all sang it. They were in Ireland. They were the bar.
Wild Colonial Boy?
It may have been that.
Okay, Josh, you have a favorite song?
Yes, a clear-cut favorite song. It was the orchestral version of Everybody Wing Chun Tonight at Betsy's Wedding.
Oh, dang it, I wrote that down. I forgot about that. No, that's a good one, Josh. Oh, I like that. Yeah, the orchestral, Everybody Have Fun Tonight. That was great.
So... this is a controversial song. It's The Humor Is On Me Now at the wedding reception, because the bishop sits down and plays it, and I don't know why that's acceptable, but I guess it is. That's the wedding worked. Everyone's having a good time. The humor's on me now. So your favorite guest star, Josh?
Favorite guest star, Myra Rose.
Oh, yeah, very
good. Catherine O'Hara, yeah.
That's,
what about you, John?
That's good. Yeah, and she definitely was a guest star, huh? It was like, she was barely in it. She was just in it long enough to embezzle Pesci. Yeah. It's a tragedy. Okay. I went with Alda. It's nice that, as you guys know, you guys probably know that Alan Alda actually raised me as a child. So it was good to like bring him onto the podcast. Because I've seen every episode of MASH 11 times, and I have a MASH log, and I know more about MASH than anybody else in the on the planet.
All right. So I went with Irish Tommy Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who, is that Tommy O'Kirk?
Tommy O'Kirk. Yeah, Tommy Kirk from Disney live action film fame, and he was the kind of the toady, right, of Will Red Denner. Okay. Mm. External recurring character, John.
Okay, honorable mention to B.B. Besch, who played Jake's mother, who was also Carol Marcus in Star Trek II, Kirk's ex-lover and father of David Marcus. Yeah. But the winner, I actually have not Catherine Hahn. What?
Madeline?
Madeline Hahn. Yeah, I'm like, I got it mixed up.
Madeline Kahn?
Madeline Kahn.
Kahn!
Madeline Kahn, of course. I forgot her name. Gosh, that's weird. Because she was in What's Up, Doc, of course, and Blazing Saddles, but also honorary guest recurring redhead. So.
Mm. Oh, very good.
Yeah. Very good.
Okay, Josh, did you have one already?
Yes. Well, I feel like obligated to put Polly there.
Yeah, I didn't try real hard. I picked Polly.
Oh, right.
So, internal recurring character. This one was a little harder. What do you have, Josh?
So, I have water because we have the tent flood, waterboarding, and the wet t-shirt contest.
Okay, I have the
that's
same.
That's really good.
I have the same. I have specifically waterboarding because I counted the buckets of water to the face. So, I have water there, too.
Okay, so I just went with abuse.
That's a fun recurring theme.
Yeah, it is. Okay. All right, your favorite death, John.
Okay. I have, is her name Jessica? It's either Jennifer or Jessica.
The CIA operative?
The CIA work friend of you know, Jessica Chastain. I guess
dies in the ambush?
Yeah, she dies in the... Because that was like... I remember seeing it in the theater, and it's just like, okay, yeah, we have a guy, and we're so excited, and he's going to meet him, you know, and it's going to be this doctor that we're going to embed as a mole, and, you know, and the scene just takes forever. The car's driving, and you just know it's going to happen, and then it finally happens. Yeah. It blows up, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a really good one. Josh, what's your favorite death? John's favorite was that poor lady.
So my favorite death was the boxing death in The Quiet Man. But like John Wayne's face, like it looks like that face that Brian Regan always makes when he's trying to be like an idiot. But like, but then like that they realize the guy's dead and they just cover his face with a towel.
Yeah.
Yep.
I see. Right. I can't believe I killed Apollo Creed up in this ring. Yeah.
Nothing more to see here, you guys. Just move along. Okay, so I guess I'm the one that it falls onto to say Osama bin Laden. That was a pretty good.
Oh yeah.
Mm.
He died.
Yeah. All right, Josh, your favorite villain.
I put Red Danaher.
He's pretty good. What do you think, John?
He's a villain. This relates to Josh's internal recurring character. I have the tent in Betsy's wedding that was leaking.
So I'm going with money.
Oh, money
keeps John Wayne from enjoying marital bliss, and I don't know. It seems like money is the source of the problem for the wedding. You know, trying to prove they've got enough money, and then going cheap, and everything is stupid. And there was probably money in Zero Dark 32, so who knows?
Yeah, mm. It's dirty.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So, Josh, your favorite villain?
Hero. I went with Stevie D.
Oh, Stevie D.
I went with Stevie D too.
Yes, yes, he totally is the hero. He tells Alda how to get out of his contract, and of course, he also wins Ali Sheedy's love. So, pretty heroic.
Did you guys recognize who the actor is?
I mean, I can't remember the name of the actor, but he's in some other stuff.
He's Mike Myers' cop friend in Soy
Murder. Yeah, that's right.
Murder. Yeah.
That's right,
the one who asks his commissioner to throw him against the wall every once in a while. Yeah, he asks Alan Arkin to throw him against the wall and to yell at him like a normal police commissioner.
Okay, so...
Captain.
He is a really good hero. And it's weird because, like, that character, when the movie started, I'm like, oh, this is the dopiest character. But he turned out great. So I went with the Reverend Playfair because without him goading Sean Thornton into fighting, we don't have to fight. So. All right. So your favorite funny moment, John.
Okay. It's got to be – okay. Oh, and her name is Jessica. There we go. See, that's why they changed it. Her real name is Jennifer in real life, the CIA woman who died. But then her name is Jessica in the movie. But then that's confusing because Jessica Chastain is the person she's acting opposite. You know, so it's confusing. Anyway, Maya and Jessica, they have sass with like throughout the movie. They turn out to be friends, but like on Maya's first day, Jessica says, "We have no reason to think that you know he changed his practice. You know, since 9/11, and then and. Maya says, "Well, we did invade his country, you know, or their country. We did invade Afghanistan." And then they look at each other, and then they sarcastically smile at each other. And then later, Jessica says something else, and she's like, "I don't think it works that way." And then Maya says, "Well, it worked well in the Cold War, you know." So they have this massive sass with each other, and so really I laughed out loud. And then, but then they're friends. But then Jessica dies.
Yeah. Well, Josh, that's hard to beat. What's your funniest moment?
Well, I just put the entire movie of Zero Dark Thirty. I thought it was a hoot.
It's funny.
Oh, man, it works really well. So I guess I went with The Quiet Man when Micheline O'Flynn comes to help deliver the goods, and he goes in their bedroom, and the bed's broken.
Yes.
And he gives his Homeric comment, so he loves imagining the wild bed-breaking love that went on. Okay, all right. Best what the heck moment, Josh?
So my runner-up was the one I mentioned before about that guy in Zero Dark Thirty sharing his ice cream cone with a monkey, but I have to go with Alan Alda's Tiger / rigorous lovemaking dream.
That was mine.
Teach me Tiger is your favorite one.
It
yeah.
was.
Oh boy. Okay. So let's see. I bet my audio quality changes because I just went into an echoey room.
Yeah, it's echoey.
Yeah. Sorry. So I'm gonna go with the look from The Quiet Man, where after being dragged through sheep poop for 5 miles, Maureen O'Hara on her way back to her house like stares every woman down to say, "I bet you've never been dragged through sheep like that before." She's the pride of the town. So wow.
She can hold her head up a little higher.
Yeah, I mean, she's got that look that's just like it's a great look. Anyway, so all right, your favorite quote, John.
My favorite quote. Okay, my runner-up, and this is, I don't know if this was intentional, but I did think it was kind of a funny quote. I'm going to actually kind of take a name in vain here, but in Betsy's Wedding, I think, like, the grandma or someone says, "What the hell kind of wedding is without a priest, for Christ's sake?" Which I don't think she was actually swearing, but she... It actually is like, okay, yeah, the priest is literally for Christ's sake, right? In a wedding. So I thought it was like a weird kind of turn of words. The winner actually is when the CIA guys, I think James Gandolfini, like says to one of his people, "What do you think of this girl?" And the guy says, "I think she's freaking smart." But then my line is, "We're all smart, Jeremy," which I thought was a good one.
That was good.
So mine, I'm going to do this in honor of Bill Fillmore. So in The Quiet Man, there is a scene when Micheline comes into the house, into Red's house, and he asks if there's anything to drink. And Red's response is, "Help yourself to the buttermilk."
Ugh, gross.
Yeah.
That is gross. Some delicious buttermilk. Okay, so from The Quiet Man, after she tells him, "No loving until you beat up my brother," his response is, "There'll be no lux between us, Mary Kate, except those in your own mercenary heart."
Oh, her mercenary heart.
Yeah. All right, so that leads us to your favorite scene, Josh.
Oh, my favorite scene is the fight in The Quiet Man. I love that protracted 30-minute fight scene.
It's 4 minutes longer than the SEAL Team 6 scene.
Whoa, seriously?
No, I don't. If it was 30 minutes, I think the SEAL Team 6 scene was 26 minutes. I think I read that somewhere. I could be off. It's like in the 20s.
Mm-hmm. All right, John, what you got?
The SEAL Team 6 scene. It was. I was kind of. It's like there's no music. It was just in real time. It was riveting. Also,
yeah, that was good.
You know, it was like America's greatest triumph of the decade, but also we crashed a helicopter like a bunch of morons, so that was embarrassing. That whole scene.
So do you feel like, though, that scene could have benefited from, like, a jaunty musical score?
Like a Wild Colonial Boy?
Not jaunty, but I think it's good direction to just kind of to scale it back and not have the drums or the strings or the, you know, not embellish, you know, something with any kind of score. I don't know, if I remember right, there's pretty much no music. It's very quiet.
Yeah.
Would the orchestral version of Everybody Wang Chung Tonight work there?
We can make that happen. Yeah, that's, someone edit that together. I think that the orchestral wedding band music from Betsy's Wedding, Wang Chung's Everybody Have Fun Tonight, set to the assassination of Osama bin Laden. I'd watch it. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I'm throwing my my vote in with Josh for the fight at the end of The Quiet Man. Hmm. Pretty darn good. Okay, best actor. I'm starting in case one of you guys takes it. I can't handle that. So I'm going with Rita Kateb as Amar, who is the first guy that gets tortured.
You jerk. No, that was exactly mine. That was Rita Kateb, Amar, the guy who gets tortured for, I don't know, 45 minutes during Zero Dark Thirty. Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
So I had Jessica Chastain. I thought she was great in there.
She's good.
Very good. Yeah. Okay, unanswered questions. Go, Josh.
So my unanswered question, we actually already kind of talked about it, but it was, did the CIA get information about the courier from the torture techniques?
Yeah. Well,
yeah, I think...
Yes, because we didn't want to bother looking through all the files that we already had.
Yes.
So we needed the shortcut of
files.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, John, your unanswered question.
We've answered most of these. I wrote down a bunch. Okay, the only one we haven't answered, I can't believe we haven't gotten to this yet, but why did Maya need to wear a dark wig during interrogations?
Oh, that's so weird. Like but not all interrogations. Like when she went to, like, some European country,
Poland?
All of a sudden she's got to wear the wig?
Yeah.
Poland?
Is it because the Poles don't recognize gingers as human beings?
I was going to say, this is what we deal with every day.
I feel like, yeah, I you've always been... Josh, every time I've seen you, you haven't worn your wig, and I wish you had, though. I mean, I wish you'd show me some respect by wearing your normal human wig.
Hey, well, every year on my anniversary, my wife makes me wear a curly brown-haired wig. So imagine how I feel.
Okay, but does anybody know the real answer for this?
I don't, and I had the same question while watching it. I mean, that's not my question, but I couldn't understand that at all. Like,
I read every single trivia in IMDb, and it didn't mention it. I thought it was very strange. Yeah.
Sorry, we can't answer your question.
Yeah, dang. Well, that's remains unanswered. I guess that's the purest question.
Did you guys ever watch Homeland?
No.
I watched the first season. I didn't watch after that.
It reminds me a lot of Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah. Yeah. What, with the ginger really and all?
with another ginger.
With little...
just being blamed for everything.
With Angela from My So-Called Life, yeah.
Okay, my unanswered question. So, at the reception, when Sean Tarnton gets punched in the face by Will Danaher... How many days was Sean unconscious?
Well, the rest of the movie was a dream sequence, I believe.
Okay. So he
died.
He died yeah. from that.
It was only in his fantasy that he dragged his wife around by the hair down the...
Yeah. John Wayne thought he was punching the town mummy and expecting the face to turn to dust, but instead it just killed him. Yeah.
All right. All right, moving on to special awards, and we have a lot. And John mentioned earlier, but I think a lot of mine are going to be the same person.
Wait. Yeah, I think you forgot best goof in our normal awards.
Yeah. Oh, best goof.
Yeah, did.
Oh, yeah. Oh, how did I miss that? Okay, best goof, Josh.
Well, for me, it's the Jessica Chastain in the hot Pakistani sun the whole time without getting a sunburn. That's just unrealistic.
Oh, yeah, that's
that
true.
Leads to one of my other awards coming up. Okay, my goof is everybody. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but in Pakistan, everybody was driving on the wrong side of the road. That was very weird. Like, I don't know who the car wrangler was, you know, but yeah, everyone was driving on the left. But no, here's a real goof that I'm serious about that I seriously don't understand. When Mark Duplass says, "Hey, there are two women at this compound," and then he's like, wait a second, here's a third woman, which only means there's an entire another family there. And, you know, they explain it away that there couldn't be three women because, you know, if there's a woman there, then if she has to be married, so there's a husband there. But if she's not married, then her father has to be there. And so am I to believe that there's no father in all of, where are they, Pakistan, that has two daughters? Or... that no one in the entire country decides to just kind of casually break that rule and there are two women and one guy living together. I don't really believe that. And also, I think that's confirmed when they go into the compound and there were like there were like six women and three men. So, yeah. So, whatever.
All right, Josh, what's your goof?
It was the sunburn.
Oh, yeah, you said that. Okay. So I went with Pittsburgh, Massachusetts. I know that that was an intentional decision, but I don't understand it. Like, why can't they say Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, well, yeah, and like, everyone knows there's no slag heaps in Massachusetts.
Yeah, and now when I think of slag heaps, I just picture like maybe 5 or 6 foot tall, like bales of hay, except it's just made out of slags. I don't. Anyway, okay. On to the redheaded award. So the first is the Battle Royale. This is Maya versus Betsy versus Mary-Kate.
Yeah.
So, Josh, who you got?
Well, so it's definitely not Molly Ringwald.
Right. Betsy's folding first.
Yes, definitely. And so, like, you know, Jessica Chastain and Maureen O'Hara are both pretty tough, but I think in, like, hand-to-hand combat, like, if they're in a cage, you know, or the octagon, like, I would give it to O'Hara. She seems a little more capable of defending herself with her hands.
I came to the same conclusion, yeah.
Okay, so because Maya has seen so much and now thirsts for torture, I think she has the upper hand in that there's nothing she wouldn't do.
Yeah, yeah.
So
Maya's
Marcus,
more likely
Marcus
to fight
Queensbury
dirty.
Rules are gone in this match. So, yeah. Okay, recasting. Who would you recast as Maya? Josh?
So I had to think about this one for a while because I was thinking to myself, who could pull off getting thrown down a hill by a man the best? And I thought, you know, Robin Wright from Princess Bride, but obviously not a redhead. So I just went with Bonnie Wright, who plays Ginny from Harry Potter.
Okay.
Okay, so we're talking Mary-Kate now. Okay, so John, who would you replace Maureen O'Hara with?
Okay. Runners-up, Deborah Kerr, the hotsie from Here to Eternity that was making out with, like, I think Burt Lancaster on the beach. Yeah. And then, kind of funny, Carol Burnett, maybe? Kind of? but no, I ultimately went with Mary-Kate would be Myrna Loy, also Ooh. A ginger who was in The Thin Man. Yeah.
Mm. So I went with Nicole Kidman. I think if someone made the bad enough decision to remake The Quiet Man, I think Nicole Kidman could actually pull it off.
Mm. I did it differently than you guys, because I specifically recast it as if the movie was being made for the first time at that time period.
Okay. So, Betsy, who would you replace Betsy with? I'm going to start with Curly Sue from the movie Curly Sue.
What?
So, you take your magical fictional-to-real-person gun... And you turn Curly Sue into Curly Sue the actor, playing someone else.
Okay, well, let's see. Who plays Curly Sue?
Isn't Curly Sue a brown hair?
No, it's red.
Are we thinking of the same Curly Sue?
It's
I thought she was brown. I thought, but what do I know? I don't see red half the time.
Okay, if you look at the right poster, maybe it's reddish.
no. Curly Sue.
All right, moving on. Okay, Josh, who do you replace Betsy with?
The inimitable Mark Helgenberger.
Wait, who's that?
from CSI and Aaron Brockovich.
No, I don't know. I don't know. Did you say Mark Helgenberger?
Marg, M-A-R-G.
M-A-R-G.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
All right, John, who you got?
Okay, first of all, Julianne Moore is a possibility for Betsy.
Yep.
She was about the same age. But I ultimately went with Christine Hodge. You guys don't know who Christine Hodge is, but she played Simone in the... ABC sitcom Head of the Class. She was the poet in the class. Do you guys remember Head of the Class?
Oh.
Dude, that's a pretty good pull right there,
yeah,
John.
You guys don't remember. Head of the Class is now streaming on HBO, and I've been watching a lot of it. But Simone would be a great Betsy, and she's very gingery. She looked like Emily Ivey. Yeah.
All right, so now it's on to Maya. Who replaces Maya, John?
Maya... I have so many runners up, you guys. This is so good. Isla Fisher from Hot Rod, maybe. Mm. Bryce Dallas Howard, you know, from The Village.
She kind of looks like Jessica Chastain.
Bryce Dallas Howard and Jessica Chastain, I kind of mix up a lot.
Yeah.
And then Felicia Day from the new Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Ooh.
And then Lauren Ambrose from Can't Hardly Wait. But the winner is Judy Greer. Playing Maya, where she continues to, like, she keeps saying to her bosses, say goodbye to these, CIA director.
Okay. All right, Josh, who you got?
Reba McEntire.
Oh, okay. Very good.
So she'd be awesome. With Rupert Grint.
Rupert Grint.
Yeah.
Grint.
You'd have to work on his American accent.
Okay, most likely to survive the gingerpocalypse, Josh.
So the gingerpocalypse of 2076, brought about by global warming, I feel like, for me, Jessica Chastain would be the most likely to survive for two reasons. One is she obviously has some technical know-how, but she's also younger and thus better educated about, like, ginger danger. So I feel like she would be the most likely to survive.
Yeah. Okay, what do you think, John?
Oh, yeah, Jessica Chastain, she's a survivor, and Maya's a survivor, and also, Josh mentioned this earlier, she somehow, it looks like she'd just get charred when she gets sunburned, but she was hanging out in Pakistan, Afghanistan, all those places, like Saudi Arabia, and she was not getting burned, so I think that will help out in the apocalypse, so I'm good with her.
So I picked Maya as well. I think she's got the skills. We're going to move immediately into Worst Sunburn because I think that film was inaccurate and a lie. The Worst Sunburn definitely goes to Maya.
Right.
You
but
think?
She didn't, yeah, but she – I mean the. I guess you're just refuting the entire – so that's what you're saying?
I am.
Nothing in Zero Dark Thirty was true. Nothing was true. You're just refuting the whole movie.
At least the sunburn part was definitely not true.
You just like – you don't even believe – yeah. we got JR. Also, we got Osama bin Laden
as an extension of the sunburn part not being true. Also, Osama's still alive somewhere. So, well, what do you think? Are you picking Molly Ringwald then?
Oh, for sure, Molly Ringwald. Yeah. She is like, she's a daywalker that burns to a crisp in the moonlight. Yeah.
Oh, totally. You yeah. know she does.
Yeah.
Like, okay. I feel like I start getting a sunburn just thinking, just like watching her. Like, yeah, she's definitely.
Okay, most likely lying about her red hair. I'm going with Maya.
She
doesn't care about lying.
I'm going with Molly Ringwald because she was curiously absent from the IMDb list of 250 red-haired actresses.
Also,
what?
Like, yeah. She's hardly mentioned on the IMDb page for Betsy's Wedding either, so...
Yeah. She might not exist.
Yeah, okay. All right, so Josh, what about you?
Yeah, so actually, I went with Maureen O'Hara because she's an actual Irish woman and thus has the most to lose by not being a redhead. I think there's a law in Ireland that if you're a woman and don't have red hair, you have to move to the island of Skellig Michael. So I think she has the most to lose and would be willing to lie.
Okay. Well, who smells the most like ginger?
Again, I think it's definitely Maureen O'Hara because in Ireland they don't have showers and they're forced to mask their odors with fragrances that they can harvest in the forest.
Like ginger. Okay. John, what do you think?
I didn't think that. I assumed Maya smelled most like ginger because she was like... She was the one who visited the furthest east in the world, which I think ginger is more popular near the east.
Okay, I now hate my answer. It's Betsy, and it's wrong. I kind
of
figured...
Because she eats a lot of sushi.
Yeah, sure. Or, I don't know. Like, while she's making craft, she's also rubbing up against ginger. I don't know. Obviously, like, she's not like... I don't see her doing a lot of cooking. So my answer is wrong, so we're just going to move on. But who's the best advocate to Congress to add gingers to the endangered species list? Gone.
Well, we know. Well, I mean, Maya's got. I think. I imagine she's probably testified in front of Congress before. So
yeah,
like she's going to do that.
Yeah. I got Maya. Okay, we all do.
Well, actually, I don't. I have. I think that's a valid point, but I think Molly Ringwald would be especially influential with members of Congress who are nostalgic for. That time period, the 80s.
So is that unless they've seen her adult film work, or especially if they've seen her adult film work?
No, I think that they...
If it's Matt Gaetz, then that's probably a plus, right? So. All right. Best replacement for Tina Louise on Gilligan's Island. And Tina Louise's character is called Ginger, of course. Mm-hmm. So
this was a great question, John.
Yes. What do you think, Josh?
I went with Maureen O'Hara because I think she's the one that's most used to life in the wild.
Yeah. What do you think, John?
I went with Maya, Jessica Chastain, because I feel like her character could definitely interrogate the other people. Like, I think she could interrogate them off the island, right?
Yes.
I think she can interrogate the professor to, like, just build a dang boat and get off the island.
Yeah. So, and she could beat the crap out of Lovey.
Yeah.
So Ginger on Gilligan's Island, she's the girl next door, right?
No,
or is that
that's
Marianne?
Marianne is that's the girl Marianne. Next door, yeah.
Okay. Okay. So I went with Mary-Kate.
Because of Mary.
Well, so not just Mary, but also I think Ginger's like the glamorous Hollywood one, right? And what's more glamorous than sheep poop, so... Okay. All right.
Maureen O'Hara was a glamorous Hollywood icon.
Yeah, she was. The most ginger, the gingeriest ginger award.
Well, did we discuss most redheaded temper?
No. Yeah, fieriest temper, sure.
Okay, because it just went into my point system for your final question. So I went with Maureen O'Hara on that. I think she demonstrated that pretty adequately.
Oh, my goodness. Was she saved from herself by John Wayne coming along and taming her?
I think that's the moral of the story.
All right, John, what do you got?
I went with Maya because she yells a lot. And Maureen O'Hara...
And swears.
Yeah, Maureen O'Hara yells a lot. But Maya also has just like... Because when I think of gingers, I think of fiery tempered like zombies. She kind of has like this gaunt. She's Josh, beautiful, but she also
I'm internalizing
like,
it right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, she's like.
Oh goodness.
Yeah, she's like this. She's a daywalker yelling at her superiors, and I feel like that's a very ginger thing.
Josh, I don't see you as a zombie, Josh.
Well, thank you. And I know you said when we were talking earlier, JR, that this would be kind of a self-awareness podcast, and I think John just showed why.
Okay.
Wait, who's self-awareness? Are you more self-aware now, Josh?
Not self-awareness. I mean, we're creating awareness.
Creating awareness, yeah. Mm. Yeah, this is what Josh faces every day. So, okay, I went with Catherine O'Hara for fieriest temper. I want my potato on my plate, not in my lap, please. So the most ginger then, the gingeriest ginger, Josh, who have you got?
Well, so I added up all the points from the previous ginger questions, and it came out to Maureen O'Hara.
Hmm. Oh, very good. What do you think, John?
I thought I said Maya was the gingeriest.
Sure. Well, you're wrong. It's Maureen O'Hara.
Oh, okay, fine.
Oh, yeah. But very good. Okay, so now there's nothing left to do but to rank these films. So we will start with our guest, Josh. What is your third favorite film here?
Betsy's Wedding.
Okay. John, what you got?
The Quiet Man.
Oh, my goodness.
Which, and I'll just take this opportunity to say, how many John Wayne movies do you think it'll take before I come around on John Wayne?
Well, you said you picked Rio Bravo as your number one for the podcast when we did Rio Bravo.
Well, right, because what were the other two?
Because you hate Casino and I don't remember. The
other one was Breathless, which I was like.
Oh, that was Zoe's one, right?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I think
Stagecoach. You don't like Stagecoach?
Stagecoach is his good one. That's his good one. That's true. No, that's true. But okay, I feel like I kind of said there's a weird ickiness to Quiet Man that I can't quite elaborate on. But I kind of feel like I could forgive it if, you know, and I feel like another actor, you know, where Maureen O'Hara can just kind of lose herself in, where she's like, I know this is wrong, but it's just right. And then she falls in his arms and they kiss. I don't get that with John Wayne. I feel like John Wayne does the opposite of that for me. I cannot relate to Maureen O'Hara falling in love with John Wayne. I can't do it. Mm. I cannot.
Wayne's a molten mountain of lust and desire.
No, I feel like John Wayne is a piece of wood that also could attack me.
Whoa. John, anyway, are you aware that John Wayne died with 66 pounds of compacted feces in his colon?
I've heard that, yes.
Does that change your mind at all?
All right, fine. I understand why Maureen O'Hara would love him.
That's why they call him the Duke.
Oh, boy. Okay, so number three is Betsy's Wedding. And then my number two is Zero Dark Thirty. Sorry. So, John, what's your number two?
My number two is Betsy's Wedding. It's a noble effort by Alan Alda, but he hated it. And also, it wasn't as good as I was hoping it would be.
My number two is The Quiet Man.
All right. And then you both have Zero Dark Thirty as your number one. So Zero Dark Thirty is probably a better movie. I just love The Quiet Man. Like, I really love that movie. And I'm not upset by the misogyny because I've seen enough John Wayne movies that I'm as numb to John Wayne misogyny as Maya is to torture.
Nice. So I guess, I guess what Josh and I are saying is that torture is more noble than misogyny.
I feel like that's, yes, I agree.
Okay.
This is very problematicer than usual, this podcast, this time around.
And Homericker.
Homericker. All right. So, hey, congratulations to us. We got through the redheaded movies. And honestly, I can't believe this category was picked. But it was. You guys picked it, and I'm glad. And we saw some great movies and also Betsy's Wedding. So the next set of movies, we're going to be joined by John's college friend, Rhett.
Now, do you want to – I told him we might try to call him.
Yeah, you can give him. You can see if he's available.
Right. I'm going to see if he's available right now. So, hey,
this is Rhett.
Hey, okay, good. Okay, this worked. You're on live.
Yay!
You're on live.
Yeah. Hi, Rhett.
Yeah, hey, Rhett. Good to talk to you. This is our first successful Rhett, world famous for bailing on us like 3 months ago. Some listeners may remember that.
I would take offense to that if it were not true.
Fair enough. Okay. But we just finished recording most of our podcast just now. So when you're joining us in 2 weeks, and you have three picks ready, correct?
Yes.
All right. Go ahead and lay it on us.
Pick number one. It's a little movie starring Robert Redford.
The Natural.
Called The Natural.
Oh, yay! Yes.
Fair enough. That's good. Okay. I know how it ends.
You do know how it ends.
You know, for a PG movie, he really... I was just thinking about this the other day. He has sex with a lot of women in that movie. Right?
At least one three. Tries to kill him.
Yeah.
Three. But, okay.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, three. I mean, Kim Basinger is one of them, so that counts as like five.
But like the second woman who's played by what's her name?
Barbara
Hershey. He never rounds the bases before she kills him.
No, he does not.
Nice metaphor.
Wait, hey, we're spoiling the podcast here.
You're right, sir.
Save it for the pod. Do you want to pick number two?
Yeah, go ahead.
Little movie starring Sean Astin.
Oh, I hate this movie. Go ahead.
Rudy.
Yes! This is shaping up to be the best podcast ever.
Thank you. Little movie number three. Are you ready for this one?
Necessary Roughness.
No. Starring Kevin Costner.
Oh.
All right,
please be
Durham.
Field of Dreams.
Nope.
For the golf of the game?
Nope.
Tin Cup?
Prince
yes, Tin Cup.
I think originally, when you gave the names to me originally, you originally had Happy Gilmore, but you switched it for Tin Cup?
I did.
Okay, so is this intentionally three different sports?
Yes.
Okay.
Originally, my third one was going to be Hoosiers, but you guys already did that forever ago.
Of course, yeah.
So I couldn't do Hoosiers, and I wanted to do three different sports. So I did Tin Cup. That's why I was thinking golf. I was like, Happy Gilmore. I'm like, but Tin Cup for some reason felt more in the spirit of the podcast. I don't know why.
Tin Cup is so great.
It's underrated. And then I also was like trying to look for – I didn't want all movies that like ended in like the – they won the game. So there's no – I didn't want to do like Miracle. These are all a little different. We'll talk about it on the pod, but they're all a little – if you think about how they end and what happens, I mean, well, we know how they end. You know,
does John? Oh, John, have you seen all these movies?
I don't know what Tin Cup is, really. I think it's a golf
really?
Movie, right?
Oh, yes.
It's a golf.
Yes.
It's so good.
Kevin Costner, Rene Russo, you're going to love it.
All right. Okay.
We all know Rudy gets murdered.
Yeah.
is this your way of attempting to get me to like have faith in sports again, which I never had faith in?
Yes.
Okay. Fine. That's fine.
So this is fascinating because we actually have one of our categories is sports movies, and do I get to try that one a second time? Because you didn't pick that category, you just gave us three movies.
Yeah.
Or do I now have to rub this category out?
Nope. It's not sports movies. This one has got a different theme that we can talk about on the podcast, but it has to do with kind of like what happens towards the end.
Okay. So I do want to say
your life.
As far as The Natural is concerned, I was going to find a way to force that into the next podcast where we got to pick movies. So I'm glad this happened.
Wow. That's in my top 10 all-time movies.
Top 10.
Huh.
You guys are too low. It's more like a top 5, but I'll allow top 10.
I don't know. It's Natural's
We have to allow for all seven Rockies, so.
Natural's in my top 25 baseball movies, I think.
Okay, very good.
It's got to be top 10. Okay. All right.
Good picks. And the good news here, Rhett, is I can watch all three of these with my kids. So.
Yes, you can.
So it's appreciated.
The Natural might get a little bored, but you can, yes.
If they get bored, I'll slap them. I'll slap them until they're not bored.
Yeah.
The Natural is a beautiful movie. I love Natural. You know what? I hate baseball. Like, as far as sports go, But The Natural might be the best sports movie of all time. It is. The Natural is the best.
It's so good.
It's the best of all time, eh?
It's so good.
Yeah. All right, we'll have to think about that. We'll have to think about that for next time. Okay, thanks, Rhett. Yeah, that's all we need for you right now. We'll take the next 2 weeks. We'll get those watched, and
awesome.
And
you'll so be a week and a half because we're gonna be podcasting on a Tuesday, not a Thursday. Correct?
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
It's due to my schedule, and you guys were accommodating, and I appreciate it.
Cool.
Happy to make it happen. All right. Yep. Thanks, Rhett. All right. So
see you guys later.
Bye.
Bye, Rhett.
I'm gonna hang up.
Okay.
So 2 weeks after that, I would be revealing our next category, but the next category after that is simply Brooke is bringing her three movies.
Okay.
Right, Boy, Brooke?
We haven't reminded Brooke in like a month. I hope she's still...
we'll remind her.
We'll remind
so, Brooke from the Kiss Your Franchise Goodbye podcast, she's joined us before. She's coming back with whatever her three favorite movies are. So that should be interesting. And then... normally at this point we would also between the three of us pick three new categories, but we're not doing that because the resurrection category is coming around and I won't reveal it yet because I guess people can still vote. But we'll reveal that on the next podcast.
Okay, so and resurrection then, is after Brooke.
Brooke, resurrection, and then JB's movies, and then we don't know anything after that.
For movies starring wrestlers making a push.
It's not even close. Like it's, I don't know. So, I mean, I'll go to the. Let's see. I'll find the. Let me go to the Facebook page. But
yeah, I think you could.
Should we give an update on the resurrection? I mean, because it's probably a foregone conclusion by now, right?
By the way, you guys all chose Jessica Chastain. You listeners, like both of you listeners, you chose Jessica Chastain as your favorite redhead. Molly Ringwald got one. Thank you, Angela. And Maureen O'Hara got one vote from my very faithful daughter, Miriam. Let's see. Mm. Don Lentile got zero votes. So in second place is Best Picture Winners by Decade with five votes. But with 11 votes, great movies that bombed at the box office. And I think we define that as it has to be fresh on Rotten Tomatoes and it has to have lost money. So it's kind of a narrow category.
Yeah.
We can squeeze out of that.
Man, you could do an entire category about Rowdy Roddy Piper movies. I'm like,
can you? I'm only aware of They Live.
You get on the IMDb.
Okay.
Just for refresher, the one that's probably going to win, the movies that were that critics liked but didn't make a lot of money. I can't remember how we phrased it. Right, you just said it. Do you remember the movies that we talked about the previous?
Yes,
time?
Sure. We and again, maybe we won't. Maybe like some mad voting will go on. I'm kind of. I mean, I would. It's you know, I wouldn't mind that. I wouldn't mind a different category. But we did the Hudsucker Proxy. Mm-hmm. We did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. And we did the movie with that you picked with who's in it is
with
James Garfield
young woman,
in
the movie? Right? Never Let Me Go with Kim
Never
Hogan.
Let Me Go. Yeah.
Yes, yes,
yeah. Never Let Me Go. So those are the three we did.
It's still no, one's
and
seen
it
Never
feels
Let
like.
Me go.
Well, no, we. I mean, at least three of us have, right? So
have. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, if you don't want us to do that category. There's time for you to vote, but I think the two people who listen to this podcast have already voted, so here we are.
Yep.
It'll be fun. We'll figure it out. It'll be fun.
That's a good one.
Cool. Yeah. All right. I think that's it. One thing I forgot to mention, I'm going to try to... I just barely remembered, and I think I wrote it down around here somewhere. We have a phone number. I'd love it if people left voicemails.
Yeah. You
know, we haven't done it in a long time, so if you have anything... You know, let's just say you're a big fan of The Quiet Man and you want to say, hey, John, you don't know what you're talking about regarding The Quiet Man. If you want to, you can call in at the number 801-896-4542. 801-896-4542. We'd love it if someone said how wrong we were. And we'd love it if someone said, you know, hey, you missed talking about this. And we'd love it if someone said, why don't you talk about this movie because they don't understand how our voting situation works. That's fine. You know, I just want to hear your voice. I live by myself. This is all I live for. So send me your voice and you can insult me if you want. That's the number. So, do that.
Do you guys realize you could watch The Adventures of Baron Munchausen as part of that category?
Was that critically acclaimed and lost money?
92%. And yes.
So it's so
a buttload of money.
That's a Terry Gilliam movie?
I think most Terry Gilliam movies are like that, right?
He did Parnassus, right? So
right.
Baron Munchausen, that's an interesting film.
Totally do Baron Munchausen, yes. Yes. I mean, there've got to be so many. I mean, so many. I mean, hard to define. Like, think of your favorite movie. Chances are it didn't do very well. Probably because you like it. So, yeah. A lot of options there.
Hey, yeah, leave John a voicemail. Also, if you're looking for all the podcasts we've ever done for this, most of them are at our the blog, which is yours, mine, theirs, podcasts.blogspot.com. A handful of them are at the jrwatchesstartrek.blogspot.com.
Yes.
Because we were doing it unofficially for a while, and then we became legit.
Yep.
What else, John? Find us on iTunes and give us 5 stars.
iTunes is big, yeah. Give us 5 stars and write a review.
Yeah, hey, get on Facebook because that's where we pick the movies and we pick the weird categories and all the action happens on Facebook.
Yep.
So, all right. Hey, you guys, this is so much fun, and we did this in under 5 hours. So
that was a lot of fun.
That was good. Yeah, thanks, Josh. As usual, I love talking to you, and also it was especially nice this time because I think I have more of an understanding of your people.
Yeah, I mean, can I just tell your listeners really quick that even though we have, like, fiery red hair, like, that belies a really sensitive nature in most gingers, and so just be careful when you're talking to them and about them.
All right.
Oh. Yeah. I appreciate that, and I could hear you getting choked up a little bit. Yes. Well, thank you, Redhead Josh. Thanks all the redheads out there. I feel like we're a little closer. One step at a time.
That's all we can ask.
Yeah. All right. Way, gents. Thanks again so much.
All right, you guys.
Let's see. Wait, I just saw it. Okay, Rudy is on... Yeah, what a dumb movie, Rudy. Oh, well.